This is Daphne Ashbrook, and you are listening to 20 Megabyte Podcast. Don't miss it.
APP Services in association with Who1.co.uk presents the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast.
Welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, number 152. I'm Adam, and I don't want to go. Oh, I'm sorry. With me this Reese. This week is Reese Patton.
There's an old Earth saying, Captain, a phrase of great power and wisdom, of consolation to the soul in times of need. Alonzi!
Robert Haynes.
Cactuses. Cacti.
Basis. Your microphone sounds terrible. Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
Worst rescue ever.
That's the one I was going to
use. That's the one I've been looking for.
And Mary Lang.
I don't want to go either.
Oh, for God.
Too late, we're recording. I had another one. I thought it'd be cleaner.
Oh, dear.
But knowing this podcast, it won't end up clean.
Don't know what you're implying.
Right, that's what she said.
Just the usual.
Mm-hmm. Right then. Right, before we move on to synopsising and discussing a very controversial two-part story, The End of Time.
Why is it controversial?
Because it splits fans.
Really good.
Because some people hate it so badly they could commit murder. Funny. And some people like it.
Really?
So, yeah, really. But what on earth is that noise?
We have we've got that situation happening here in this very household.
What, that noise? So,
no.
Really?
The girls like it. I really don't.
Okay, well, that's really...
What?
Get out. Be quiet. We're not going to talk about whether we like it or not yet, because we've got to talk about it. And I've got some... Well, I've got a report come through from Gally, from friend of the show,
Patrick
Bishop.
Greetings to everyone at the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast. This is Patrick Bishop from North Hollywood, California. And this week I'm coming to you live from Gallifrey One, the Doctor Who convention here in Los Angeles, California. This is my probably unofficially my fourth day here. I've been here since Thursday, and it's Sunday today, this morning. It's been a blast. Where to begin? I'll just tell you about some of the guests. Philip Hinchcliffe, the classic series producer who produced 3 years of the Colin Baker era. I sat in on his panel, and he was fantastic. I think this was his first convention in the States. He's been awesome. Lots of people got up and expressed how his 3 years of producing Doctor Who were the reasons that they became a fan. I, myself, am in that group. So he was great to see and hear from. Lots of good stories from the Tom Baker era from him. Sylvester McCoy, he was just great. His panel was last night, his interview session in the main hall. And he comes out with this miniature sleigh, I guess. Not a sleigh, but the baldy stuffed animals attached, like they're pulling a sleigh, like from the Hobbit movie. He comes out in that, out of the TARDIS, and then he throws it at the audience. He just throws it into the front row of the audience. It was so funny. Surprised someone didn't get, like, killed or something. So instead of sitting up on the dais and being interviewed by Nicholas Briggs, Nicholas Briggs was interviewing him along with Nicholas Briggs' boss, who's the head of Big Finish. I'm not sure of his name. I can't remember the gentleman's name.
Gary Russell?
So instead of sitting up on the dais and being interviewed, Sylvester takes his mic and goes down into the audience and just moves amongst the crowd and takes questions from everybody. You just raise your hand. He'll come to you, hold the mic to you, and he'll answer the question face-to-face. It was awesome.
Yeah, he did that in Chicago, too.
So I'll be putting it up as soon as I'm home and edit it. But he was wonderful. And Nicholas was just busy following him around and keeping him on track. And it was really funny. It was awesome. So after Sylvester, it was time for Freema Agyeman. And she was great. It was standing room only, again, in the main hall. Pretty much like probably 2,200 people in that hallway. in that main ballroom. It's probably like 3,600 people here in total. It's just amazing to be around so many Doctor Who fans at once. But Freeman was great. Every other person that I've seen so far has been great. Nev McIntosh, who played Lucy Madame Vastra, she's here and she's fantastic. Dan Starkey, Strax, of course. Michael Jaston. They've all been wonderful. And they're all like amongst the fans. So like you'll be at breakfast one morning and you'll be standing in line next to Sylvester McCoy, or you'll be going up in the elevator with like Strax, that's happened to me. So it's just really interesting and fun. Along with other things that go along with being at a convention, like the costumes and everything else. So there's so much more to tell, but I don't want to take your time.
Go ahead.
audio file for next week. Another update once I'm home. I've collected my thoughts and collate all these pictures and film that I've taken. But suffice to say, it's a great conference. I'm having a blast. Wish you guys were here. And this is Patrick Bishop signing off from Gallifrey One.
Yeah, I wish I was there too. Thank you, Patrick.
I wish I were.
Thank you, Patrick.
Yeah.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, Sylvester McCoy did that at the Chicago TARDIS too. He does that. Didn't want to sit on the stage. He just came right down and, you know, bothered the audience.
Excellent. Yeah. So I've seen some pictures actually on our Facebook group. That's the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast Facebook group. Oh, that was a doodle noise. I don't know where it came from.
Wasn't me.
And it's an excellent picture of the people that he was just referring to, actually. I saw Daphne in there. And there was... What on earth was that?
Not me.
It's not me.
Not me.
It's me. It must be me, then.
Who is it always?
Microphones and other noises don't mix.
No. Right, anyway, as I was trying...
just sitting forward.
As I was trying to say, yes, we had... it was Freeman. No, it was Daphne. It was Michael Jaston, as he said, and Trace Hines. Who else was it now?
Where did you see these pictures?
Yeah, I don't see them.
Yeah, I'm on our Facebook page, and I don't see it.
All right, maybe it wasn't our Facebook page. Well, somebody posted it. Who was it now? I'm confused now, because I've definitely seen it somewhere.
I mean, he sent in a video.
He posted a video.
From LobbyCon on Friday.
That was ages ago. No, I'm going to...
Marriott Lobby, the night before Galley starts.
Oh, maybe. I know who it was. No, sorry. I made a mistake. This doesn't happen very often.
Uh-huh.
It had to happen at some point.
Like last week.
It had to happen.
Dream on. Dream
all the time?
It had to happen at some point, but what happened was it's actually Ken Deep from Podshock posted a picture.
Oh, okay.
So Ken Deep has taken a lovely picture of the people that I have just mentioned, and so has Patrick. So if you happen to be friends with Ken Deep, you might have seen that picture. Dear, I feel really stressed.
I get jealous more and more when I see pictures from Galley.
Now that sounds, because of the dodgy connection, that sounds like you said, when you see bitches from Galley. I'm sorry, but it
said
actually
pictures.
I know you said
that, dirty-minded,
but it did sound like you said bitches.
Just keep quiet, Ruth.
I'm a talker.
It's Daphne Ashbrook syndrome. Okay, at least the Americans have got. At least the Americans have got clear connections. Oh, right then, now end of time begins with a little fly over the moon and a view of. Don't start sighing 5 seconds into my synopsis.
Get out.
And anyway, we fly over Earth, rather like my little video of Who Blackpool, and then we plummet towards Earth.
Yeah, I saw that video.
I don't so much fly as plummet.
Yeah. and then we're suddenly in London, and so there's a Christmassy sort of scene with Wilf wandering through, and he sees something in his mind. Somebody going,
and it's a magic voiceover.
And then he sort of
how's it going?
He's he's sort of drawn to a church.
No, it didn't go like that.
I'll be quiet.
That's very flippant.
Be quiet. I'm synopsizing. So he's drawn to a church, and he looks upon the church window while the choir's singing, and he sees in the window a sort of blue box that looks a little bit like a TARDIS at someone's feet, funny enough, and looks behind him, and then there's that woman who was in the very last Charlie Chaplin film, Claire Bloom, that's the one. And she's sort of talking to him mysteriously. And says something mysterious about the doctor, blah, 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 and then disappears. And then we see a close-up of the TARDIS.
It said a demon fell from the sky, then a man appeared.
Yeah.
A man in a blue box.
Yeah, and then we see...
They called him a sainted physician.
It was the Master, of course. We know it's the Master. They showed enough of his face to know that it was the Master. And we already knew before this it was going to be the Master anyway, didn't we? Because we saw the little preview, let it go, don't they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So obviously the next scene after the titles and stuff is the Doctor arriving on sort of an Ood. Is it the Ood sphere? I think it probably
is. Yes, the Ood sphere, yes.
Yeah.
And Ood Sigma is waiting for him. He's wearing sort of strange sort of holiday clothes and being quite funny.
Yeah.
Probably the last time he is quite funny, really, isn't it? Because he sort of talks about...
I don't know. My line that I did at the beginning of the episode is kind of his last really funny line, and then it's all... serious, pointing guns at people and frowning and going...
it just goes on about... He named a galaxy Allison, got married to good Queen Bess, and she's not a virgin any longer, blah, blah, blah.
That's one bit I really didn't like. He doesn't go and deflower people like that.
Yeah, but about the good Queen Bess thing, at least it explains why she was in such a mood with him in the end of Shakespeare's code.
Yeah.
Yeah, didn't they release that particular scene as a trailer? I think they did.
This scene was sort of shown on one of the charity. I think it was a Children in Need thing.
Oh, okay.
As a sort of little teaser,
with the terrible fake snow in the background.
It isn't good. No, it just looks like painted rock, doesn't it? Probably because it is.
Yep.
But they've done a pretty good job to paint such a large area of it.
Mm. What did you say was the excerpted scene? Was him talking about her?
This whole scene from...
The whole snow scene.
Where he locks the car, the TARDIS like a car.
Yeah, when he set, where he sets up to out of the TARDIS up to the bit where he's with the Ood, and they're sort of mind-melding a little bit. Who's fidgeting?
Robert.
Now, That particular quarry is used quite a bit. Heart of Mount Vesuvius. It was the surface of Mars. It was where Jack was in concrete and the concrete was broken open in Children of Earth. and it was also the surface of House and the Doctor's Wife.
All right. Okay. Thank you for that. I was just wondering with Doctor Who, does the big leader of any alien have to have his brain on show? Is it just a thing that happens to happen? So we know he's a big leader of the Ood.
If he's that particular Brian Cox, of course. He's not the brainy Brian Cox, he's the actor Brian Cox.
Yeah.
Who, Brian Cox is going to be playing Sidney Newman.
Newman, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I heard that.
Oh, and by the way, the
which one, the actor one or the sciencey one?
The actor.
Oh, very good. Yes, okay. That's my joke. Thank you very much. Did anybody see the pictures? The sort of location pictures of Daleks in London?
Yeah, I posted it on the Facebook page this morning.
No spoilers.
They look great.
They did.
No, I haven't looked at them yet.
Anyway, so the Doctor and
by the way, that where they're the Ood are joining hands and everything. That is a famous location. It was the caves from Revenge of the Cybermen, 1974, Sarah Jane Smith.
Wookiee Hole.
Yeah.
Okay, so that is Wookiee Hole, then.
That's Wookiee Hole, where they almost lost Elizabeth Clayton, almost drowned.
No, there's no Wookiees down there. But anyway, so like you say, they were all linking hands and the Doctor was reading what's going to happen and what's actually going on. And we get a little flashback of what happened with the Master and the previous time we saw him. And basically the Doctor explains
what happened. That's nice of them to do that.
But then we do get to see who actually picked up the ring. The Master's ring, that is.
Yes.
And the Doctor realises part of him survived, and then he acts like he did when he saw Bad Wolf all around that Chinese planet.
What he went?
Yes.
Sort of, yeah. And sort of says he must...
Did you notice?
What?
when he runs back to the TARDIS, you know, he's really running really fast. He's running quite as fast as he can. When he opens the door and he rushes in, he sort of pulls up, because obviously in real life you don't have that far to run. But it's
also when he's running, there's a piece of music that is obviously Murray Gold coming up with "I Am the Doctor" for the first time, because it sounds like
the sun's gone wiggly.
Yes.
It sounds like that from the soundtrack. There's a piece called "The Sun's Gone Wibbly," and it sounds exactly the same as that, or very close anyway.
You're right.
And that's part of "I Am the Doctor."
But the fact is, stop doing Norman Collier impressions and listen to me. The fact that he's running at full pelt, like you say, and the fact that he can use the central locking doodah so as he can run straight in does really work quite well for that scene, in my view. And then we're in the prison, and Lucy Saxon is being sort of all.
Here's the bit that just makes me go, what?
The only bit about this I didn't like, well, a couple of bits actually. One was the fact that there's months and months have passed, yet there's still remnants of his DNA or enough remnants on her lips.
Yeah,
right.
Does she not wash her face, or does she not? Does the skin
How
not?
How dirty
replace...
are your jails over there?
I don't know. Well, we assume it's months and months, but after the. It must be months and months after that.
This is a time travel show. It could have been the next day. No.
It could have been, but...
That's right.
I don't know. Anyway, Wilf is at home and sort of just about to indulge in Christmas. And then we see sort of in the background the mysterious Claire Bloom again. And then there's some hocus pocus in the prison. Whilst some blue paint is poured into a... Is blue... What?
I was thinking of something. Where? About how old it is, how long it is. There's two tramps who come across the master, and he says, "Oh, you used to be Harold Saxon, didn't you?" So he sort of mustn't have been that too long ago, if you know what I mean, for him to recognise.
Well, it wasn't obviously the next day. It was long enough for the for the DNA to disappear from
at least a month, Lucy's, I'd say, at least.
But on the other side of things, on the other side of things, it's a science fiction fantasy TV show. So, in fantasy terms, it can work. And then there's some hocus pocus. This adds to the fantasy science fiction TV show.
There's double hocus pocus.
Yeah. Some special potion, etc., magic. But we've had magic before in Doctor Who, anyway.
Magic!
He's been on this show many a time, flapping his ears most of the time. He's in the other room at the moment.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, as I was saying, we've had magic on the show, on Doctor Who before in Shakespeare Code, so it's not, it's not un-Doctor Who-y.
Remember magic on Doctor Who?
Not necessarily. That was, okay, fine.
So it's not. It's just a bit over the top and cheesy. But
the way I try to justify this to myself is, it kind of makes sense if you can accept that this is a guy who regenerates when he dies, like all other Time Lords. And in The Sound of Drums and The Last of the Time Lords, the Doctor being aged back and made young again makes sense in terms of the satellite network. But it looked really cheesy, and it's the same with this one.
Mm-hmm. But it's interesting to note that his hair's dark until it all goes wrong. But
and he never seems to have to shave.
No, well, there you go. I haven't had one either. But she has a counter plot. Because she knew it was going to happen all along, so she just happens to have a counter potion, and there's a big explosion, and the Doctor arrives.
And that
reminds me of the scene in Curse of Fatal Death where the Master and the Doctor are going back and forth. I just happened to.
Yeah. So anyway, what's the black guy and his daughter? What's their name? I can't remember their name.
Naismith.
Oh, they're slimy, horrible characters, aren't they? but they're reviewing the prison CCTV and see a little... terrible rendition of somebody running past shot, and but never mind. Now they walk into a room that looks distinctively like the library in the Silence of the Libraries. I'm sorry, not a library, Silence of the Library in whatever the other one's called.
I wonder why that is.
Because the floor looks almost identical, Kirby.
This is not the Silence of the Library place. They've used this. This is Tredegar House, or Tredegar, or I don't know how you pronounce it. It's in Newport. It has been used all the time. It was Harriet Jones' office, Christmas Invasion. Cassandra's Lair in New Earth. They used one of the outbuildings. Tooth and Claw, Sir Robert's House. Girl in the Fireplace.
Okay, that's enough. Thank you.
Army of Ghosts.
All right, thank you.
Okay, we've got
that's enough.
Family of Blood.
That's enough.
Thanks. Yep.
Grained on our memories.
Right, a bus turns up.
It's grained on our memories, literally.
Be quiet. A bus has turned up with Sparrow Lane on it. I wonder if that's a throwback to,
Sally. That's for why I'm mentioning Sally, I thought.
And we see some great veteran comedy and British actors like
great dancing from Bernard Cribbins.
June Whitfield.
Yeah.
June Whitfield and the camp bloke from Heidi High, who's the driver.
Is that how he's known over there?
Remember?
I was wondering where I saw him from.
Yeah, he was the sort of dancer bloke from Heidi High.
Yes. Yeah. With his wife.
We were talking earlier on about the tramps. Now, the bloke who plays the tramp in front, I seem to remember him being... He used to play quite young characters.
Hold on, you missed something up with Wolf on the Bus.
Oh, did I? Go
when
on.
He's
then.
Describing the Doctor and Wolf he's saying, Bottom here, all sticky uppy.
Wolf
on the Bus. Oh, God. No, anyway. That modern hair, all sticky uppy.
Yes.
So anyway, are these chaps tramps? Because they got some money to buy themselves a burger.
With onions on for Christmas.
Yeah.
You know what that scene reminded me of? You know the Cyberman two-parter? I think it was the first one.
Oh, yes, definitely, yeah.
It's probably filmed in the same place.
That's
what I was thinking.
May well be. But anyway, the master acts a bit weird. He's very hungry, so he eats the burger and the woman providing him with the burger.
Well, now, wait a minute. I have a question. Mm. The guy who was one of the two tramps, the black guy... is he the same guy that Donna is marrying?
No.
They sure looked the same.
No, they didn't.
When Wilf is lamenting, you know, how this guy is only on minimum wage and that, I thought, well, you know, so she's marrying this loser?
No, Mary. No.
Okay.
He doesn't look like him at all.
No.
They're about 7 years between them.
All more than that, he's looks like a teenager, and this bloke's in his 40s. Anyway, moving on.
Okay.
Moving on. Right. So, what I was thinking about the other chap, the other tramp bloke, is very familiar. I'm sure he's been in some 70s
Pete
programs.
Lee Wilson.
I was trying to place him.
But
he's
anyway.
Been in lots of stuff.
He has, but I just can't place what he's been in. But never mind.
Uh-oh. Here comes the list.
I don't want to know. So the master is acting very strangely and very scary and very mad. And then we see his skeleton sort of, as he laughs, it sort of makes a sunny... And he changes. You can actually see his skeleton through
his skin. He becomes the Terminator.
Yeah, he does indeed. they're running really fast, but he's walking quite slowly. But it doesn't matter because he's got special powers. Right. Now, I haven't actually got a problem with these special powers.
No.
Can I explain why? Basically, he's got regeneration energy, which he's misusing, mm-hmm. and it's killing him, and he's got all this energy inside. Yes. That is the energy he's using fly around like that. I haven't got a problem.
I don't have any problem with it either.
But other people I've heard do have a problem with it. But there you go.
Well, they're just stupid.
Moving on. Now, the doctor is doing some I Can Smell a Time Lord, as well as the master in this episode.
Yes.
They do all that.
And they're both doing the magic and star sniffing each other's moving on.
Beg your pardon. What episode did you watch?
Now, I think these scenes where, you know, the wide shots of the doctor on the edge of the quarry... or whatever, and it is actually a quarry in this episode, funny enough, standing looking for the master, and then the master just going and banging that drum four times. I think that's a really good scene.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did too.
And makes you think, is that him knocking four times?
Yeah.
And I thought, is that it? Oh.
Yeah, well, they do that all through the episode.
Yeah, they that do. Is yes. And the waters of Mars. The quarry, in this case. It's the ports of Cardiff.
All right. Well, never mind. But yeah, there's lots of running and chasing going on, but unfortunately Wilf and his band of oldies intercept him. And then we see a charming scene, and it is a charming scene in which which culminates in June Whitfield pinching David Tennant's bottom.
Is that your hand, Minnie? Yeah, it's just,
yeah. And of course that was a genuine reaction because he didn't expect her to do it, which I thought was fantastic.
Apparently she was trying to get as much of a grab as she could many times.
I do love the way she looks at him as well, like she would fancy, like she's an 18-year-old, you know, she
fancies him.
If it was unplanned, did they then go back and film it from the rear?
No, they must have reshot that little bit just because they just to make it.
His reaction to it was so much later than her grabbing him.
Yeah,
I think RTD expected her to pinch him while he wrote the script, but instead she actually grabbed one of his cheeks.
Yes, I think
we were waiting for that.
I think we've gone over that bit quite enough. Right, now the Doctor and Wilf go to have a little cup of tea in a cafe, and we see another. Very charming scene between the two of them.
Wonderful scene, yeah.
I'll tell you what, this is what, you know, if people sort of hate the end of time, you can't beat it for the magic between Bernard Cribbins and David Tennant.
Yes.
And this episode, both this whole story is full of that. And I know maybe, you know, you should say it's, you know, that doesn't make a story, but sometimes it's the entertainment value of it. And these two are just amazing. Together.
It's one of those rare moments where I really believe that Tennant isn't just having fun as the Doctor. He's really that old character that we know who he is when Matt Smith plays him. He's 900 years old and he's talking to Wilf as two older people around a table. He just looks a lot younger.
Yep.
Yeah.
And also, the other thing, obviously, Wilf in his 80s and he's looking at the Doctor as if he's like an older person. Mm. You know, even though he says, I'd like to be your dad.
Yeah,
you know, he looked at him and he said, the love in his eyes and how he doesn't want him to die and he's desperate to help him.
Part two, even says, you know, you don't want to hear, you know, an old person going on and that's when the doctor tells him, I'm older than you.
No way.
It's a thing of beauty. It really is a thing of beauty, these scenes, when there's just the two of them together.
Yeah,
Then, of course, we see Donna come back.
I like those lines, though.
Mm, what lines?
Yeah, but the doctor says, I'm going to die. And he says, so am I, someday. He says, He says, all right, I'll try not to.
Yeah. then we see the young nipper tramp who's just been killed by...
you forgot about the... We see Donna... through the window of the cafe.
I just said that bit, but you weren't listening.
Making a joke.
I'm just saying that. Anyway, so we saw Donna, and then we saw the young nipper that the master's just
he
eaten in the quarry.
Like young nipper.
Poor old Mary. She's going to get some stick for that one.
Yes, I am.
She already has.
Dear.
Just edit it out, Adam. Another 6 hours.
It's funny.
Oh no, he wants our mistakes. No, he edits his own mistakes out. He leaves ours in.
Yes.
Don't know what you're implying. Anyway, the doctor then sort of implies he realizes the things he did wrong in regards to the waters of Mars, because he gets a bit upset with himself.
And when Wilf sees that he's crying, he just goes, "Oh dear," or something like that. It was just
Merry Christmas. The doctor says, "Merry Christmas."
Actually, that line's used a lot to get rid of angry or sad situations, because when Sylvia comes out, the doctor goes, Merry Christmas, and she goes, Merry Christmas, but she's still angry at him.
Yeah. So anyway, the doctor goes back to, I think it's a quarry area, and he's trying to sniff out the master while the Naismiths are sort of sitting in their thrones drinking wine. And then we see the sort of shimmer people. I think they're called shimmers. I can't remember. They're not called shimmers, but they shimmer.
One of them is from Being Human.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Shimmer.
And then
They're not shimmers. They're wearing a shimmer.
Yeah, they're wearing a shimmer.
Okay.
They're Vinvachi.
Yeah, but
I
couldn't remember the species, so I just remember the word.
Yeah, they're not
shimmer.
Zachi. They're Vinvachi.
But it's not shimmer, is it? It's shimmer.
Shimmer.
Yes.
Even she says it like that. What's a shimmer?
Yes.
Oh dear, don't choke on it. Good grief. Anyway, right. So where did I get up to? So the doctor, you know, is out in the at night trying to sniff out the master, and the master's sort of sat there eating something because he's holding.
Around about at this point, I thought, just before that scene, this could have been a three-parter if it had the usual length for an episode, because that was about the 45-minute mark, and it was actually a pretty good cliffhanger.
Yes.
And you had a dramatic voiceover from Timothy Dalton, and I thought, oh, you could have edited it and had a three-parter.
Yeah, that's the bit I got up to, the Timothy Dalton.
Along with eventually a dramatic spitting from Timothy Dalton.
Yes. Showering the time.
Oh, yes. I think one spit was acceptable. It was the two spits that...
I think there's more than two.
There are about three.
Do you reckon he was chewing on something, or maybe a fruit pastel or something like that when he did those?
Chewing on the scenery is what he was doing.
No, I'm just off. Chewing on the scenery.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
That was terrible. He was brilliant.
Sorry, Mary, you carry on.
Oh, I was just going to say, yes, I thought that this two-parter had enough cliffhangers to make it more than a two-parter and enough endings to make it more than a two-parter.
It had more endings than
the Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings.
You've missed a couple of things, too.
I haven't got to them yet, but carry on.
No, he hasn't. You know when they're at night?
Yes.
How come when the master zaps the doctor...
I haven't got to that bit yet.
You're talking about Timothy Dalton at the end.
No, the Timothy Dalton bit's in the middle.
As well.
No, he's at the end spitting as well, though.
He may well be. He's just been chewing too many bits of scenery.
In my list of things, that shimmer bit doesn't come until later.
I haven't got to that bit yet. Oh. I said. Let me explain before I go insane. Now, I just said the word shimmer because I couldn't remember the species that their name was. So the name that stuck in my head was shimmer. But we saw a fleeting glimpse of the scientists in their shimmers because they looked like humans.
Shimmer.
Yeah. And then we saw a fleeting glimpse of Rassilon, played by Timothy Dalton, because he's actually still narrating the story to a certain degree. And then we go back to the master. Who's rubbing his hands together, getting some Artron energy, I presume it's Artron energy, ready to fire at the doctor.
I thought it was just static energy, just really powerful.
That's what I thought.
So anyway, he does fire at the doctor, and then we have, a really, really good collection of little scenes between the master and the doctor, which are really good.
Well, we find out he was just kind of like a spoiled schoolboy, really, with a lot of money.
What, the master? Well, the doctor.
Master.
Yeah. Yes, I'm glad you called me Master. It's about time to...
The Master.
Master.
Yeah, anyway, the Master...
Oh, thank you, Adam.
The Master allows the Doctor to hear the drumming in his head. No. And then a helicopter turns up and sort of kidnaps the Master, shoots at the Doctor.
It does that old trick of... Did you notice? That old trick of... Oh, only until it turns its lights on can you hear it.
Right.
That's a common trope.
Yeah.
But I'm sick of it. I'm absolutely sick of it. It's absolutely pathetic.
It's ooh, he's on a roll now.
Yeah.
Steady on.
It's just annoying. Hey, you missed, though. You missed the master being Tony Stark.
Did I?
Yeah. You know when the things come out of his hands and he shoots up into the sky?
Okay.
Iron Man.
We did mention his special power.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. Much
we did. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We just didn't detail them.
Like
he was
Iron Man in that moment.
I wouldn't know. I haven't seen Iron Man.
He shot the things out of his hands. Well, that's why.
Anyway, we're back with Catherine Tate and Bernard Cribbins in their home, and the mum's been given a very funny Christmas card.
She was given a shirt.
Hilarious.
Yeah. I actually quite liked the line. She got a shirt and she said, "Oh, it's wonderful, Donna. Did you keep the receipt?"
Yes. Now, And also Wilf gets the book, the Naismith sort of autobiography book, and they've got hold of the Master. And it's interesting to know that the Master is strapped into a chair rather like the Doctor is.
Hey, hey, the episode.
Oh, what now?
you know when they zoom in on the book, they zoom in exact same pose on Joshua Naismith.
Yeah, I like that.
Yes.
I thought that was pretty cool.
Anyway.
It's been there for ages.
The chair that the Master strapped in is the one that they use for the Doctor later.
Oh, that's what I said.
You said like a chair he was in.
Oh,
like.
God, that's what I meant. Meanwhile.
Kind of Hannibal Lecter-ish.
Yeah.
Yes, very
Claire Bloom appears on the telly, but nobody else can see her apart from Wilf.
Not the Queen.
Yeah, because I think it's the Queen, but it's in fact Claire Bloom. Yeah? Yeah?
It's time for the Queen's speech.
Or Claire Bloom's speech.
Is it?
Yes.
The only thing I find frustrating about this Claire Bloom thing is we only find out who it is because of Russell T. Davies' book. You know, it should have been... I think it would have been nice if they could have cleared it up in the story.
Well, he said
Tennant looks at her at the end makes me think there is a deep emotional connection.
Oh, clearly, but it would be nice to have made clear what that deep emotional connection was.
Yeah.
Some people have said he's done this a lot of times.
He says he left that in there as a plot thread for somebody else to pick up on if they ever wanted to later on.
Okay.
So they could provide the answer.
Supposed to be?
Well, he says it's the mother, isn't it? Yeah, that's what RTD says.
Now, there are some people who say that it's Donna because of at the very end when they're at the wedding, they bring, I believe Wilf asked the Doctor who the woman was and they remember her and then he looks over at Donna silently.
Yeah, I remember that particular opinion, but that was before it was published in the book that RTD said it was the
Some
mother.
People still have that opinion.
Okay.
Even though it was published in the book.
I don't.
Fair enough.
As far as I'm concerned, if RTD says it's his mother.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway.
The guy who came up with the idea is telling you what it is.
Who's the other weeping angel of the pair of them?
Exactly.
Is it father?
That's another woman, isn't it?
I thought it might have been the Master's mother.
Oh, right, okay. Anyway, the Doctor goes to visit Wilf, and...
at one point, the Doctor and the Master were brothers.
Okay, thank you. And there's a slightly awkward moment.
Oh.
Be quiet. There's a slightly awkward moment between the Doctor and... is it Sylvia, the mother of Donna?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, Sylvia.
Because obviously they all disappear, and then the TARDIS dematerializes. It's sort of just in time before Donna.
Are you shouting at thin air?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I am.
Well, she was yelling. She was yelling at Wilf. She was yelling at Wilf not to go with him.
Yeah.
Isn't that when Wilf gets into the TARDIS?
Yep.
Yeah, and then the Doctor says, I'm out of here, I'm coming
Wilf,
with you. Okay.
Wilf officially becomes the oldest companion in Doctor Who history.
And I love his reaction.
I mean, we're all thinking about, okay, he's going to say, bigger on the inside, like everybody does, but instead he says, I thought it would be cleaner.
Cleaner? I could kick you out, you know.
Yeah. And there's a lovely scene in which the Master's brought into the sort of big... sort of sanctum of this Naismith Platt house in a straitjacket. That was quite very apt. And of course, the Naismiths want the Master to help them fix this. What is this thing called again?
Immortality Gate.
Immortality Gate. Yes.
Immortality. Okay.
And the Shimmers actually switch off their Shimmers.
Vinvachi.
Turn off their Shimmers.
We all tell him.
And then the Master eats very, very quickly a chicken. It's disgusting. I hate messy eaters. It's a bane of mine, you know. I really do not like messy eaters. So I find these scenes, I know it's supposed to be revolting, but I find them probably more revolting than most people would.
I don't know. It looked like fun. All I could think of is, you know, when he was given the direction to tear into that thing, you know, and be eating it, I thought, oh, I'll bet he had a good time doing that.
Yeah, he had a straight jacket on or something protecting his clothes so he could just throw it everywhere.
Yeah.
And of course,
I use that scene as when I'm trying to remind my girls which story it is. I say, remember, it's the one with the Master eating the chicken. Oh, yes!
I like it when he's eating the hamburger and he just starts rubbing his face. He was going completely mad then.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is also where we see what's going to end up being the Doctor's doom, the two sort of rooms, cubicles in the background. So very relationship between Naismith and his daughter is a bit sort of not concerning. What's the word
not
for
a
it?
Bit. Not a bit.
It's a bit.
It's
weird, isn't it? I feel uncomfortable watching it. The Doctor, meanwhile, arrives in some sort of stable. It looks very much like the stables used in The Next Doctor.
The Next Doctor, yes.
Yes.
And then he makes the TARDIS invisible by shifting it
Let's
in.
Let's see.
Oh, God.
And then,
I haven't found it yet, sorry.
Okay, well,
I know. I knew Kirby went quiet there. I knew he was looking.
Then we see very amusing scenes in which the Doctor... forces the shimmers to
sneak around.
The Vin Bachu
shimmer. No, as I said, it forced he's turned the shimmer thing off. Oh, that's what I meant. I got it right this time.
I like Velf though. He says, "Oh my lord, she's a cactus."
And the master said, "My name is the Master." And
Master.
Yeah, I think this is we were sort of leading up to the bit, and another shimmer switched off. Where the Doctor sort of flies in and says, don't let that man anywhere near that thing, because he eventually realises what it is. After the girl, says it fixes whole planets.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Doctor says, "What's he doing, Skeletor, or whatever you call
him?" Yes. Yeah. And then we have that slightly annoying thing where when he does jump into it, everybody starts shaking their heads like magic does when he's flapping his ears.
Hey, you know where that comes from? That shaking the head bit.
Go on.
Matrix?
There was a movie in the early 90s called Jacob's Ladder with Tim Robbins as a Vietnam vet who was actually dead during the story. But there's a famous incident in My Lai in Vietnam where US soldiers murdered innocent kids and that because they'd been given LSD. That sort of movie was based along that sort of line, like he'd been given LSD and this was like his imaging, but the people in did that kind of shaking effect, and that was when it was first seen.
Okay.
So that was back in the early 90s.
I was unaware of that.
I didn't mind it. I thought it was a nice effect.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to make a wisecrack joke about it being from The Matrix, but after that little story Robert told, I feel a bit wrong saying that.
a bit wrong.
Yes.
Okay.
Story of my life.
So basically, it's a very long sort of scene at that end scene with the Doctor. Sorry, the Master becoming all powerful, and laughing.
I thought it was brilliant. I did too.
I think of how long.
Did John Sim get paid extra for that?
I don't know. I quite like the
how
fact
many
that
costume
it
costume changes.
Pardon?
Oh my God.
Sorry.
How many costume changes?
I know.
Yeah.
Well, that's quite like the fact that it all led up to.
I think there's something in The Confidential which I didn't watch this time, but I've seen it before where he had to shoot multiple times on that apartment block in London, and that was odd that they did that one in London.
Yeah,
even the Obama conference.
But I quite like the fact that it led up to the Master Race gag. I thought that was quite clever.
Yes, yes.
The thing is, the entire story, the entire first episode is just to lead up to that pun.
Oh, it is not.
We've mentioned
the scene with Wilf and the Doctor in the cafe. It's not just the lead up to that pun.
Yeah,
I'll tell you what else I like about this. It's annoying because everybody hates the Master, but everybody in the whole human race is the Master. Now, it is a sort of the thing the Master would probably like, being he's so sort of full of himself. So, and also the fact that, they've explained this what's it called again, this machine?
Immortality.
They explain what it does, so it's fine because that's what it does. It's doing what it's supposed to do, and it's got the Master's imprint. So
and he did tweak it a little bit too.
of quite a lot, right. I would imagine he tweaked it.
He did.
So, although it's annoying that the fact that they're all the master, it's what it's supposed to do. And
I didn't find it terrible.
No, it's fine. I haven't got a problem with it at all. I just, you know. And it led up to a rather cheesy pun, like you say, cheesy gag.
But it also led to a rather emotional scene in the next episode where they're on the ship and they're looking out the window, the Doctor and Wilf, and Wilf asks, is my wife now that, is her skeleton now that
Reese,
man?
Reese,
right, yeah. Yes.
What have I told you about jumping ahead?
I don't care, I'm going to mention something I like.
Yes, okay. So yeah, episode 2, we see the Citadel.
Hang on, I'm counting Rathlon's fifth. 2, 3.
Oh my gosh.
Welcome to the 20 Megabyte Rathlon Spitz podcast.
He spits 5 times at the end of the first episode.
Like I say, he's sucking on some, he's chewing on
very
some
enlightening. And he makes up later, you know. Fruit. He does a bit of a spit.
Yeah. Fruit sceneries, yes. Moving on. Yeah, we see a very beautiful shot of the Citadel. Ah, sort of.
Oh, you know where that's from? Man.
Will I ever finish a sentence on this episode?
No. That's from the Gallifrey Guardian section of Doctor Who magazine.
The ironic thing, Robert, is that although I'm not able to finish the sentence during this podcast, your sort of in between sentences is going a bit funny. You're starting the sentence, having little bits of the middle of the sentence disappearing, and then you're finishing it.
I can hear it.
Yeah.
You know, one thing with that scene there is that I didn't notice it before, but all those Dalek saucers flying on the ground.
Yeah, I was going to say, I froze that scene because I really wanted to look at it. And you
see the same thing.
The globe around it is cracked and all that smoke coming out, and then all the Dalek saucers. Yeah.
Nice. I've got to have a look at that.
Wait, what are you talking about? Oh, yeah.
There are Dalek ships crashed everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there are.
And you're seeing that the dome around it is cracked and
The smoke the only glimpse of the Time War that we've ever seen, really, isn't it?
Right.
Do you know what it reminded me of? Do you remember the Star Trek, as in the new Star Trek film, the first one where they're on Vulcan just before it gets destroyed, and for some reason it reminds me of that. Now, the other thing is the table that the Time Lords have sat around. Now, that's a very specially made table, obviously, for this episode. I'm surprised that's not in the Doctor Who experience, because it's obviously a very, very detailed and iconic table.
Yeah.
So I'd like to see that at the Doctor Who experience.
I hadn't noticed the chairs until I watched this again last night. The backs also have the detailing.
Yes, indeed. All right, so this is where we get... This is where we get to see, because obviously leading up to this, we think Rathlon is just a kindly narrator who's talking about, you know...
I'm today's narrator.
How can he be Rathlon, though? Did they resurrect him for the Time War or something?
Yeah, they resurrected him and the Master.
I believe that that's another RTD thing that we found out later, because there was... he's only called Rathlon once by the Doctor. He's not even called Rathlon at the credits. He's simply called narrator and Mr. President in the credits. Yes.
And I've heard the theory that like in other cultures, that maybe because he's the president, you know, like popes pick different names and they pick names from previous people, that this could be a name handed down.
Yeah, because
Rathlon the second.
No, yeah. I think this they've resurrected Rathlon because they were desperate. They were desperate enough to resurrect the Master, so they would have been desperate enough to resurrect Rathlon. And he shows his true colours by using the immortality glove, or whatever it's called, to kill.
No, no, no.
What?
It's the glove of Rathlon.
Oh, there has to be something of Rathlon, doesn't it? Yes.
Like the spittle of Rathlon.
Now, is the glove that he has, is that the same glove that they used in Torchwood?
I think it is, you know.
The resurrection
same
glove?
Definitely.
This is the left hand, and that one is the right hand.
There was two of them in Torchwood.
Two gloves in Torchwood.
No, there was only one in Torchwood.
There were two. Right. As you all know, everybody, I'm right, and I can tell you now.
So am I.
Having watched every episode of Torchwood, that there are two gloves in Torchwood.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep.
There was
one. They come in pairs,
and then they found.
Said.
Yes. They found the other glove in a church where there was loads of weevils. And that's how they got to bring back Susie for a second time, I believe, I think.
Yeah. And keep Owen alive.
Killing Susie.
Yeah, and that's...
Sushi.
The prop is the same prop.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, okay. I agree it's the same prop, but I wonder if it's the same glove within the same genre.
I think it is, you know.
I would like to think it is.
Mm. Yeah. I actually came up with a theory when I first saw this.
It's time travel. No.
Well, you know, things landed on Earth, didn't it? It's an artifact of something.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a crack. Obviously, there's a crack in time there, isn't there? And obviously, mm-hmm. it's to do with the Time War. And I reckon it's just fallen through time and landed on Earth and ended up at Torchwood.
So in my universe, it is the same glove.
Yeah, I believe it is.
Well, speaking of things landing on Earth, and this is jumping forward slightly, but it's a theory I came up with when I first saw it. When Gallifrey starts to appear, I had a theory that there was a Dalek that survived and crash-landed in Utah, and that's the one they found in the episode Dalek, because that was set in 2012.
Ah!
Cool.
Ooh.
Good point.
Nice. Yeah.
I bet RTD wished he had you on the writing panel.
What I don't understand is why the Earth doesn't break into a million pieces with such a large planet right next to it.
Yes, yeah, I had it.
Can I just say, it's a science fiction fantasy television series.
Really?
I'm so glad somebody's telling Kirby that, because that's his line.
It was our line before. He's stolen it.
Okay.
Right. Moving back
he's
to the episode.
He's beaten me with it often enough.
Moving back to the episode, there's a brilliant scene in which the Doctor's strapped into a chair, and so is Wilf. And the three of them are so fantastic.
Oh, yes.
He picks up the gun, and he...
Good man.
Yes, and throws it on the ground. It's fantastic. Well, he could easily just shot him with it, couldn't he? Yeah.
He could have done. In the first episode, his phone's ringing. He pulls out the gun instead of the phone. He goes, oh, no, wrong one.
Meanwhile, anyway, we got Donna, and she's starting to remember stuff, and her head's starting to burn a little bit. And there's a lot of people complained about this, isn't there? The fact that when she sort of went a bit funny and this bolt of Time Lord energy shot out of her and wiped out all the masters, that... Hang on, they never said about this, and he said about he built in a defense mechanism. I had to build
it. Yeah, I had no problem with that.
No, I haven't got a problem with that.
I thought that was a very sweet thing. He was looking after his friend.
Yeah.
Right.
And I liked the way that happened. I think it looked lovely.
Yeah.
On screen. And the fact that we were seeing little flashbacks.
And RTD and even Moffat is always pulling these things out, you know, and then explaining later, you know, what it is.
I loved seeing that getting, you know, the better of the master as well in that scene. Masters. Mm. Of course, we know the fact that brilliant scene I love as well when the Doctor's just smiling through his sort of just his eyes.
Yeah.
And the Master just
don't worry, she's all right.
What's going on?
You go, that's better. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
Don't worry, she's all right.
I love that scene where they're talking to each other and the Doctor almost talks him over, and he's contemplating joining the Doctor.
Yes,
it's
yes,
so well acted from John Sim.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, you could have been so beautiful.
So beautiful.
Brilliant you are. I swear, you really are.
Gosh.
And the Master's face, John Sim's face as well, is funny in these scenes. And of course, it all leads up to, like you say, he's trying to talk him round, but it all leads up to him not noticing one of the guards is slightly taller or shorter than
him. I love that moment too.
Clever. Yeah.
Silence in the Library.
Yeah. And of course, we see the flashback. We've already seen. I think this is a longer version of that flashback to his childhood, isn't it? I think.
Yes.
Yeah, of the little boy walking towards the untempered schism.
I like that we finally find out that the four knocking four times. Is that just a heartbeat? It's two heartbeats.
Yeah.
And also,
so he's got a stethoscope.
I did quite like
the
link to the theme tune as well.
Now, is it called the Eye of Infinity or something that they have to look into?
It was a time vortex.
Yeah.
Well, they look into the untempered schism, but they have to walk up to that thing that looks like a mirror, and it's.
Yeah.
And it's called the Eye of Something.
Yeah, which is supposed to be the heart of the TARDIS as well, isn't it? In the movie.
That's the Eye of Harmony.
Eye of Harmony. That's what
Harmony.
We meant.
Thank
Eye of
you.
Harmony. Yeah.
Arc of Infinity was a different show entirely.
Yes, I know.
It was. Never mind.
There was people complaining that they never mentioned the sound of the drums or the four knocks in the master's head in the classic series, but I think it's still enough to explain why he's so mad.
I think it just gets stronger and stronger the nearer he gets to this particular moment.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, we're just making that up, but it's okay.
I'll just believe that.
I don't have a problem with them not mentioning it in the classic series, because RTD came up with the idea in the new series.
And it
all works, I think.
Yeah, I got it's okay. It's a science fiction fantasy TV series. But what I will say, when I wrote an episode of Doctor Who once in which the da-da-da-dum, and this is before Russell T. Davies wrote this, but the idea that da-da-da-dum in the theme tune was in fact Gallifrey and Morse for the Doctor's name.
Oh,
that's clever.
But anyway, moving on. But I was wrong, obviously, because it was actually Time Lord's heartbeat. So, meanwhile, Rassilon is trying to plot a way to save the Time Lords, because obviously we're coming right to the end of the
I will not die! I'm not going to die here!
Stop spitting at me, Reese.
Sorry. I've got a discreet. That's disgusting.
So, yeah, like I said...
worst rescue ever!
Yeah, no, we haven't got to that bit. Yeah, it's the fact that that he hasn't noticed the guard slightly. It's brilliantly done. I really like that bit.
Yeah.
And then worst.
I've never heard anyone before.
Yeah, worst rescue ever. Then is followed. And of course, I'm trying to spot the bits where it's actually.
I always hear that in the comic book guy's voice from the.
It's only a long shot.
Yeah, I'm trying
to rescue ever.
I'm trying to spot
long shots.
I'm trying to spot the bits where it's actually a rubber David Tennant. Rather than the other one.
It's very difficult. That thing.
It's very difficult to see a difference, actually, because I think they use mainly him.
I think they only show it once, Adam. Only once in a long shot.
So they went to all the trouble of building that just for like a half a second scene. What a waste of money.
You see it twice in the two long shots of the staircase.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, they get beamed up to the ship, and Wilf goes all gooey because he can see he's in space, something he's always wanted to do.
We're in space.
Yeah.
I'm an astronaut.
Dun,
he's saying that's supposed to be the Red Dwarf bit, is it? When they come away from the ship,
Starbug.
So that they're sort of the Master wants to find. He knows that they've disappeared somewhere, and that they run away, and the Doctor has to come back in. I please finish a sentence for once? God's sake!
No. That's good. Because then you pass on to something else, and then you say, why are you bringing that up?
Hang on, let me finish the sentence, then you can go back and talk about the thing I missed. The Doctor, I like the bit where the Doctor runs out, and then he comes back and grabs Wilf, who's still gushing over the scenery, and sort of shepherds him back through the door. It's fantastic. Go on, Robert.
Now, I was going to say, when the Master is in the Geneva, the maps on the screens... show both Adelaide from South Australia and also Perth in WA. I thought that was very nice.
I'm sure it is.
I didn't see you wandering around, though.
No.
It would be the Master.
No, it's only the map of it, isn't it?
I wonder what the Actors' Union... I wonder what the Actors' Union thought of the fact that all the characters, or mainly characters, were all played by John Simon most of this episode.
I wonder if we get extras money or something like that.
Well, they come back at the end, don't they?
Oh, yeah, of course. But only right at the end. They turn everything off in the spaceship, and all you hear is sort of creaking noises and stuff. And
I don't know why.
Yeah,
things cooling down.
Which is memorable of every World War down in a submarine movie.
And
they can't see us if we're quiet.
Star Wars.
Star Wars.
The little woman captus gets very cross with the Doctor because he's apparently wrecked the place.
Yeah.
Watch
your mouth.
That was who said it was racist? That was on the program, wasn't it? It was her,
the male one. The Doctor. No, Will says they're cactuses. That's cacti. That's racist.
Anyway, all right. So the Masters are sort of doing a bit of
pantomime-esque acting.
they're doing a sort of mind meld, aren't they? They're sort of contacting like they did in the Three Doctors. They're trying to sort of
Contact has
triangulate.
Been made.
They're trying to triangulate the position.
Contact
of...
has been made. That's, I kept wanting them to say the entire sentence, yes. They didn't.
Yes.
So,
contact has been made.
Rassilon has realised that he's got to send a message to the master by way of a sort of a tap, 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 tap noise. And how can he get something that can be here and there at the same time or something like that? So he just happens to have a nice little diamond at the end of his staff, and he throws it into midair, and somehow it manages to head towards Earth. But have we got a problem with the way they did that?
Isn't that, I think that's, did they open up something when they, that image comes up there?
Did anybody understand what Robert said then?
Yes, he said, don't they open up a portal or something when that image comes up?
Yes, they do.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Yeah.
They do.
But I tell you what, though, the fact that you managed to, one, throw it through into the portal and throw it exactly into Great Britain from there, has got to be. He should be bowling for England. That was one hell of a...
I had no problem with that at all.
And you?
No.
I didn't do that.
No, because it's following the heartbeats.
Well, why didn't it land a bit closer to the master?
It did. Everyone's the master.
Now... this little tiny little one did... Oh, what now?
You're missing something. Didn't
anyone... Hang on, what did you say? It was... That's what it sounded like.
What?
It sounded like...
No,
go on.
You know how we just had the meteor crash land?
Yes, that's what I was going to say. Did anybody see that footage in Russia?
Yes.
Wow!
Oh, yeah.
Now wasn't that?
That's pretty amazing.
So I'm saying it's spooky, isn't it?
We should expect Gallifrey to appear in the skies any second.
No, but I'll tell you what.
The rain of spittle for Rassilon.
Can I just say? I've just knocked my microphone. Has anybody ever seen those United States disaster films, recent ones? Like, for instance, the one where the asteroid is heading for Earth and they try to deflect it, but actually does hit Earth. And you see the asteroid flying through the sky before it... is it Armageddon?
Armageddon, sick of it.
But no, the way they depicted that and the way this thing actually looked on these videos was so close. You know, there's one
Adam,
shot that... Yes. I didn't get any of what anybody said then. Sorry.
The thing that I'm not clear on is, did the windows break and damage happen because of the sonic boom or because asteroid pieces actually hit?
No, this was a... It was a meteor. It was a meteor. Please. The thing that happened in Russia was a meteor.
Pieces of it actually hit the Earth, or was it the sonic boom that was causing the damage?
It blew up. It blew up so close to the surface that when it shattered it, that's when it caused the damage. And it was a shock wave as well. But because normally they explode so high up in the atmosphere that all the little pieces of, you know, meteor...
The sonic boom, to answer the question.
Okay. Thank you.
But it actually, bits of asteroid, it did explode quite close to the surface, a lot closer than it normally does. Hence, people were injured by the... bits of meteor. Mm-hmm. But anyway.
Imagine the ice.
But yeah, the fact that you brought that up, Robert, I was just about to bring exactly the same thing up at the same time. And I can say there's one shot from that.
It's spooky.
There's one shot from the real meteor footage where the car's driving along the what looks like a sort of motorway. And it looks like it's coming straight for the car. It's amazing.
It does. Yeah. And the screen almost whites out for the brightness. Yeah.
Yeah, it's incredible. Some of the most incredible footage I've ever seen. It's almost on a par with the terrible footage of 9/11.
Three potential impact sites were found. Mm-hmm. Two near Lake Chebarkal and another some 80 kilometers farther to the northwest. One of the fragments left a crater 6 meters in diameter. There's another hole in the surface of the lake, but most of the damage is from the shockwave.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm. Yeah, that's what I wondered.
I'm just fascinated
about how
things either leaving the atmosphere or entering the atmosphere can cover so much ground, because that was did you say 80 kilometers away? One of the other craters?
Yeah.
That's amazing, just...
But the other thing is...
It travels so quickly and so far.
The other thing is, you saw the size of the crater that this... in the episode, which would be more or less correct. A rock that size would produce a crater probably even bigger than that. Mm. Yeah. But anyway, back to the episode. But I could talk about that particular meteor. Because obviously, recently, I saw one driving home from Newport. And that was at night.
How did it fit in the car?
Did it reach the pedals well enough?
Jesus Christ. Anyway, listen. I was driving over from Newport, and I saw this... What look, because obviously we're in a flight path from Southampton Airport. Planes regularly fly over Cowes. And it looked like a plane was just sort of flying in a slightly different route than I'm used to. And I thought, that's fun. And then it was getting brighter and brighter. I thought, uh-oh, there's a plane going to crash. And then it started burning up. Like, we've seen in pictures of planes on fire at night time. I thought that's generally what it was. And then it suddenly was going very, very fast. And I thought, uh-oh, it's coming straight for me. And then it sort of turned away. And then it completely broke into loads of little pieces and it was flaming. And then at that point, because it was going so fast, and it went straight across in front of... It looked like it was going over the Solent and then disappeared, that it clearly was... something from space that was coming down. And I went home and sort of went online to find out what it was, and of course it was a meteor, what they called a meteor shower, but it was I think a meteor that broke up and then became
it started off
meteor.
As one and then it became a shower.
So it's quite similar to that, but only it wasn't quite as dramatic, because that was in daylight. You see how bright it was in daylight, and that was just, and I was driving then, it could have caused a few accidents, but I feel quite privileged to have been able to have seen it, because it was very dramatic.
So the car that the meteor was driving, was it registered?
No, be quiet. Anyway, right, back to the episode in hand. We see a very lovely scene, and this is a wonderful scene between the Doctor and Wilf, in which Wilf asks the Doctor, have they all changed? Has my dead wife in the ground changed? And the Doctor said, I'm sorry. Just to keep.
I'm so sorry.
I just thought he didn't know.
Which isn't really an answer.
Well, it is, and I think he doesn't want to say yes, does he? But
that doesn't make sense, because it's...
No, it doesn't.
The immortality gate is sort of to heal living creatures. It's not
right.
Well, that's probably why he didn't say yes. But I think he's implying that it has.
Mortality.
But I haven't got a major problem with that. Particular bit.
No, because it was quite a dramatic moment with Wilf asking that.
And I accept
the whole scene is great.
I accept what you're saying, though, Kirby.
Yes,
but it doesn't bother me in the slightest. But this scene is just, obviously it's a long scene, with a gun, and he just keeps refusing. It's beautiful the way the acting of Bernard Cribbins. Mm-hmm. It does give a lump to your throat, because he's really begging. He's trying his hardest to.
His eyes.
If he just has even just the tiniest hint of sadness in his eyes, I immediately just go, "Oh,
world is
I'll give you a hug."
just says, "I don't." Dogs. It's the way he says, "I don't want you to die."
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The most wonderful man. I don't want you to die. Yeah, that was
I'm getting a lump on my throat. Until, of course, he finds out about the, is it a 5-point star, this rock? By which way he snatches the gun back off Wilf.
Because Gallifrey is returning.
Yes.
When Wilf offers the Doctor the gun and says, then kill him first, and the Doctor's saying, that's how the Master started.
Yeah.
Actually, I thought the Doctor was a bit selfish when Wilf said, that's an order, take the gun. He says, no. Ordered to do something.
Of course, then we have a hint of what's going to happen with the Doctor when the Master sort of stands in the middle of the silence of the library and looks upwards and sort of holds his arms out, looks up at the roof, which you see fleetingly, because obviously somebody falls through it later on in the episode.
I wonder who that could be.
Meanwhile, the Master
that was driving the car before.
No, shut up. The Master has arranged for the connection with Gallifrey to be put together by rigging up some sort of device with this 5-point star, and then starts transmitting while the Doctor frantically tries to arrange for them to drive the spaceship back to Earth.
As with the Wilf. And then we have the Star Wars says. Oh, yes, sorry. We do. But as the male Vinvoce says, we can't do that. We've just got life support and gravity control. Everything else is kaput. That's what he says.
Yeah. It does look like Starbuck, you know, when you said
I thought that when it flew over the sea.
I hadn't considered that before.
That's like Starbuck.
Yeah. So anyway,
it's a white point star.
Oh, thank you. A white point star. Thank you for that correction. Yeah. What do I have you on the show for? Meanwhile, lots of missiles are launched at the spaceship, and Wilf gets a chance to do some basically shooty uppy things with this, which looks like Lancaster Bonner type.
Which one's Luke? Which one's Luke and which one's Han?
I don't know.
Get cocky, kid.
It's great, this scene.
Yeah, right.
Great scene.
You know, Wilf made up his own lines in that.
Did he?
I should say, Bernie Cribbins made it. Although
you are funny, Robert.
Can't help it, it's the internet.
You can't help it, but it is quite funny.
I've had trouble before.
Yeah. I don't like it when you're calling me Robert. I like that. I know it sounds a bit odd. I do actually like to understand what he's saying.
Really?
Yeah. Anyway, meanwhile...
unlike communication where the other person's going...
Meanwhile, of course, I love that...
However, we're not giving him a chance to say what he had to say.
Okay, right. What were you saying?
Besides the Star Wars, Star Wars Episode 4 reference with the guns, there's also Star Wars Episode 1, Phantom Menace, reference with the vote being taken on Gallifrey.
Yes, precisely, the Senate room.
I have a feeling that this whole thing is just, this whole thing is RTD just trying to throw everything he possibly could
against the walls.
I think that might be slightly
see if it sticks.
I have the video paused during that scene, the Senate scene, and it's got Rassilon in mid-spit again.
I didn't think it was so wet in Star Wars.
So interesting.
Yes. Anyway. God, I've completely lost my thread. Oh, yeah, sorry, right. They're on the spaceship, and there's a bit where the Doctor's determined. He's looking very fierce and as he's flying the spaceship towards the Master's domain. And there's a bit where Wilf comes, so you're going to die. Do we die with you? I don't mind. Yeah. I don't mind, but do we die with you?
Like, what?
Yeah. That's another
I did actually
scene.
Love that. I don't mind, because he says later on, I'm an old soldier, I've reached my time, and I just thought, it's just, his dedication to the Doctor is lovely.
Yeah. But then, of course, we have the scene that upsets everyone when he jumps out of the spaceship and falls through the earth.
And then that's my biggest problem.
Yeah. That's a leap too far.
I think it would have been all right if Tom Baker hadn't fallen from a shorter distance and ended up regenerating.
Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. That's my biggest problem with it, is I wouldn't have had any problem at all, except Legopolis completely shows that just a short distance can make the Doctor regenerate. So what's
that? That was a different Doctor. Different body.
Different body. You could say that, yeah.
Yeah, right.
I go with Grace on that.
I've got no problem with it.
All I've got, I've got a little bit of a problem with it, but I haven't got a major problem with it. It doesn't upset me to such amazing degree that it destroys the enjoyment of the episode for me. I just thought that was a bit silly. But it was a good way for him. It was a good way for him to enter that particular scene. Mm. And
whenever I watch it, I think, well, that's not likely. He would have been completely splattered on the ground, but I can ignore that because we have a scene with David Tennant, John Sim, Bernard Cribbins, and Timothy Dalton, and they're just incredible actors, and they do a great job.
Yeah, of course, Bernard Cribbins hasn't arrived yet because he's still trying to persuade the thing we just
Vinvoce.
To turn the spaceship around. Of course,
and in Christmas Invasion, doesn't the Doctor knock that Sycorax off the cliff, which isn't even that high, and that's the death of the Sycorax?
Yeah. Well, maybe
he knocks it off the spaceship. That's
maybe they're more delicate.
Oh yeah, the spaceship. Okay, so the Sycorax dies.
Meanwhile,
that was pretty high.
But the Doctor doesn't.
No, that's right. But meanwhile, Rassilon makes everybody earn some wages from acting now, because he's able to turn everybody back into themselves.
John Tim was thinking, no, I need that money. Don't turn them back. I mean, the master was saying, no, don't turn them back, because my evil plan won't work.
And then we have, looks like a dim sun starts appearing in the sky, which is actually burning Gallifrey, sorry.
Wait, does that mean that they roll it around on little carts in the Chinese restaurant?
Dim sum.
God. Anyway,
well done.
For God's sake, completely throwing me off my track again. Right, anyway, yeah. Now, Deb did ask me, why is it look like it's on fire? And then she said, oh, hang on, it's because Gallifrey burned, isn't it? So this is Deb, not a Doctor Who fan. So she accepted the fact that it was just Gallifrey burning. She did actually get drawn into watching this episode. Isabella watched this episode rather than the previous one. She got a bit distracted on the other occasion. Then it got towards the end, and she said, "Is this the one where the Doctor dies?" It's the Doctor dying, isn't it? That's the whole point. The story is the Doctor dies. Yes, he regenerates, but he dies. She then got into it after that. Meanwhile,
I'm stepping away for just a minute. I'll be back.
Listen, there's a saying, there's a bit where there's lots of people panicking and running through the street. And when I was fast-forwarding through it, I thought it was Russell T. Davis. There's a bloke with glasses and like a maroon-coloured V-necked jumper. It's not him. But when I was fast-forwarding, it just very fleetingly, I thought, RTD managed to get a cameo in his own last episode. And I can't see any reason why he couldn't have done that, actually, but he didn't, obviously.
I like Stephen Moffat's anecdote. I think he got on Press Gang or something. And he said, I did one shot and they liked it and I wandered off and they said, no, Stephen, you've got to come back. There is lots of takes you take on a scene. He said, I can't do that. I'm a writer. I like to sit down behind a desk and not act all day.
But then we see that the shot of Gallifrey coming towards Earth and the weather staying nice and sunny, the clouds moving.
Yes,
which is a fantasy science fiction TV show.
So I thought the clouds had been from Rassilon Spit.
I don't have any problem with Gallifrey appearing and...
No.
The fact is, it's not completely there, is it? It's sort of still in flux. We're seeing it, but it's not really properly there yet. Although there's a bit of shaking from the camera.
Now, depending on how much it can carry, does that make it a flux capacitor?
Goodness.
Anyway, meanwhile,
we've had Star Wars in references.
The moment of disaster for the Doctor is the fact that Wilf turns up and decides to rescue some sort of white-coated Doctor person from the cubicle.
Oh, yeah.
If he hadn't done that, we'd still have David Tennant today. So anyway,
right.
Good on you, Wilf.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah, so basically, then we come up to the scene where... the master wants to go with Rassilon and until the Doctor eventually makes him realise... Well, actually, it's Rassilon that makes him realise that he's pretty worthless in the eyes of the Time Lords. And the Time Lords
James
are...
James Rassilon.
Yeah, the Time Lords.
Be quiet. The Time Lords are actually even more evil than the master. So that sort of makes him sort of...
I like
a bit
that
of a
we
turncoat.
Get tiny but, little bits of explanation of the Time War, but we never see an actual full story. I love the glimpsing and the imagery, like the mouth of the Nightmare Child or the King of the Neverwares with his Neverwares.
Yeah.
I love that sort of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Typical RTD dialogue.
If you notice when Rassilon is holding out the gauntlet, there's a little bit of it that is flapping. One of the finger flaps is just kind of...
It was the middle finger, I think, which is very funny on set.
Well, but the problem I had with all of that, was how the Doctor early on describes Gallifrey as this wonderful place, you know, that got caught in the Time War and is destroyed. So it was very disappointing to see that the Time Lords themselves were not so nice.
Well, that's how he chooses to remember them. He says
that in
the episode.
Yeah, that's right.
I think it's just that maybe they discovered this way to have ultimate power over the Daleks and any member of the Time War, and it was just a case of power corrupting absolutely. Power corrupting absolutely.
And in classic Doctor Who, I know the Time Lords have been the villains behind, you know, schemes against the Doctor some of before. Them. But the
fact is that the Time Lords here, as Rassilon said, wanted to basically become a higher sort of level of being, like wipe out the whole universe first at the same time, and that's why the Doctor had to end it. And that, at least that was an explanation of it all, because you were wondering.
Isn't that basically what Davros wanted to do as well?
What, wipe out the whole universe and become
wipe out
a higher?
The universe and be essentially, yeah.
They basically wanted to do the same thing, so they basically had to wipe out the whole lot. So it's an explanation that which sits rather well with me.
Yeah.
Right. So
now, go ahead.
I was going to say back to the episode. I forgot where I was now. I'm going to have to go back because I've lost my. The bit that I found a bit irritating with the Doctor's pointing the gun at Rassilon, but every time he turned round, he uncocked it and cocked it. Why didn't he just turn round without uncocking it?
Something else about that.
What?
He also shifts back and forth. He has it in his right hand when pointing at Rassilon, and his left hand.
He swaps hands.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, but what? He could have easily gone off in the. He's cocking it and unlocking it. He could have shot his mother. I mean, Claire Bloom by accidentally doing that.
Okay, it's because the camera was on that one side and he always had to show his face. Yes.
Because when he turns around.
I thought that was a very loud sound when he cocked the gun too. It was very. Far too loud.
Yeah.
But to be fair, though, it is actually a very good scene. I just found the cocking of gun a little bit irritating. And of course, the thing that makes him sort of realise what he has to do, he sees the face of the mysterious woman, and so does Wilf. And then he looks quite emotional. Aww.
Yeah.
And I love the bit when he turns around, he thinks he's going to shoot the master, and he says, get out of the way. Mm. When I
was watching it this time, I didn't. I was thinking, he's going to shoot the link.
The link was the master at that point, didn't we? If I remember rightly.
No, when he puts the white point star, and that's the link that brings.
But when I was watching it, when I was watching it originally, I thought, oh my god, he's going to shoot the master, and then he said, get out of the way. So that was
The master himself keeps saying, you shoot me, and the link is gone.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. That's why I thought he was going to shoot the master.
Yeah, exactly, I thought so too.
Oh, so, I didn't this time. I couldn't remember. I was thinking, he's going to shoot the link.
Okay, fair enough. So at this point, the Doctor accepts that he's going to die because I think Rassilon says, you die with me. So he says...
And he just says, I know.
I know.
Wasn't Link the name of the first Centauran we ever saw?
That was Lynx.
Lynx. Bad luck. Anyway,
nice try.
Again, then the Master returns the favour and just says, get out the way to the Doctor. And then he uses his superpower energy to... Well, basically,
have you guys ever played Street Fighter?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, a long time ago.
When they do the shaving with the hands and the fireball comes out, Hadouken! Hadouken!
Sort of got what you said.
Yeah, I can't understand you at all.
I understand. I sort of got what you said. It didn't make much sort of verbal sense, but I think people understand basically what you're going on about. It's just a bit of a shame your microphone's a bit weird today.
That's
the connection.
And that. Connection. Yeah, of course. So the Master saves the day. Oh, God, what was that?
Wow.
What was that?
That was celebrating music. He saved the day.
Yeah, that was my phone.
Oh, was
I was I was expecting a text, and I stupidly laid the phone near the computer.
Ah, okay. I'll let you off.
That was good talk.
So, after all that... After all that, of course, everybody's celebrating outside, and the Doctor's sort of lying on the floor of the library. And I'm alive.
Not the library.
Oh, right. I know it isn't.
You're still alive.
I'm just saying.
Number five is alive.
I'm still alive. And then, be quiet. This is a very important part of the story. How brilliant
it's
is it?
Amazing.
That you hear
amazing.
The knocking.
Yeah.
And where the camera moves around and you see his face. And the realization.
Yeah, but he didn't knock four times. He knocked 16 times.
Mary.
Yeah, but he knocks four times each time.
Stop being curvy, Mary. Stop being curvy.
Yeah.
I think actually in this...
Contaminated.
In this instance, it's only the first four knocks that count, because that's the knocks that make him realise what's going on.
There were four lots of fours, so... if you can count in fours, there are lots of fours there.
And I will say, right, about this scene. Now, people also got annoyed by the Doctor's attitude to the fact he knew he was going to die.
I thought that people got it around the wrong way. They said he shouldn't have shouted at Wilf. He wasn't shouting at Wilf, he was shouting at himself, because he doesn't... Yeah. He knows he's going to save him, and he just thinks, I could have done so much more, but I'm this kind of person, I can't leave him there. And he was saying, damn me for being so nice, pretty much.
Yeah, it's just, I think, basically, I've always thought regeneration is going to be quite a painful process. Nobody likes to go through pain. Also, there's an essence of himself that he likes, of this particular incarnation. He knew it was coming to an end, and he was very frustrated by this. So although he was also quite arrogant as well. I mean, I can accept that part. That he was a bit arrogant, because obviously he says at the end, I don't want to go. And he fights against it as much as he can, hence the big explosions. And a lot of people have got problems with all that stuff. And the fact that he takes so long before it, and he doesn't take that long to regenerate it. The fact is that Peter Davison took a whole 25 minutes of Cajun for Cajun Androzani to actually regenerate.
I'm going to pick up the Kirby role here. He doesn't take long to regenerate at all. He starts regenerating when he starts glowing yellow. He's dying.
He says, just after he steps out of the cubicle, when it irradiates him, it started, because his face then goes from scarred to clean, because it started to regenerate him. Yes?
I like that bit when he's still on the floor in that booth. And he starts to stand, and Will says, hello, still with us?
Yes.
A lot of people said they would have liked Matt Smith to become the Doctor then, but I don't know. It would have been nice, but I think they need to keep the regeneration effect with them glowing.
Yeah, I agree, but he could have done that within that cubicle. But I'm glad it didn't happen, because I do like that.
What he calls it, his
reward. I like that. What?
No,
I would like to have seen Matt Smith meet Wilf, though.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Oh,
but
God, yes.
That would have been great. But I'm not complaining about the way they did it.
When I
first watched it, I did want him to regenerate in the booth, because I thought that seemed to be the natural flow of things. But watching it this time, I'm along the line with how Reese views it.
Yeah.
Hear that, Reese?
Yeah.
Yay!
Anyway, but I love the bit where he goes, "It will open now," and with the door.
Yes.
And then, of course, like I said, his face sort of goes back, and he just said it started. So obviously, he is now regenerating. So he's got 17 minutes, actually less than that, because we're titled. So 15 minutes to regenerate. Like I said, Peter Davison, 25, probably even more minutes. To regenerate. So the third Doctor...
Yeah, but that's only screen time, though, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but it still counts.
Screen
time. Apparently, John Pertwee's Doctor took even longer when he got stuck in the time vortex with the TARDIS brought him home. So I'm not having this.
Now, I will admit something. It doesn't annoy me in the episode, David Tennant, the length of time it takes him to regenerate, but something that does annoy me is that at the proms and at the Symphonic Spectacular... they have a montage of all the regenerations, and he gets a good 30 seconds longer than everyone else.
And why not?
Because he's got to march through the courtyard of the estate there and see the ood and everything.
I don't mind.
We have to have the countertenor.
You're jumping ahead there, Kirby. You're jumping ahead.
Well, and how long did it take for the seventh Doctor to become the eighth Doctor? I mean, he laid in that morgue for a while.
Yeah, that was quite. I haven't counted that one. That's a good one. We could go back and time
good,
that
yes.
one. Yes, yes, well done, Mary. You've earned your pay for today. Anyway, right. So the doctor, be quiet. The doctor says to
why am I getting any of this
to,
pay?
What's his name? To Wilf, that he wants to get his reward. So this we see Martha and Mickey. Mickey looking particularly tough.
Martha, hold on. You missed Donna waking. But Donna's waking up, and she said,
I did. Yeah, I know. I've missed that bit as well. But anyway, like I say, Mickey's looking really tough. He's got a real sort of tough face on him now. We see Strax pointing a gun at them. And he's licking his lips.
Isn't it?
Yeah, licking his lips, and the doctor suddenly comes up behind and bangs him on his probic vent.
Well, he's got a bigger gap between his teeth than Eve Miles does.
Yes. Yeah, and that's quite... It's a lovely scene when you see him just standing there.
National Health Service dental work?
What? Be quiet.
And I noticed, too, that with Mickey and Martha, that they were playing music that sounded a lot like Torchwood as they were running through that.
Yeah. So, anyway, that's okay. I could accept they might like each other there because they were holding each other in a very lovey-dovey way. And they might be married.
And they might be working. And they might be working for Torchwood.
Now, some people say he very stupidly turns up and saves Luke. I mean, apparently people are very annoyed at the fact that he did rubby tacky Luke to save his life. Well, you might as well just
why.
Anyway, but again, I quite like this.
That whole thing is to show that lots of kids in TV shows cross streets without looking.
Yeah, and on their mobile phones as well.
Yeah.
Yeah,
at least done that.
But also, they're just so used to it
to being on a closed street and acting.
Yeah,
and that was basically what.
That was in Confidential.
Yeah, I think they did mention the Confidential.
It was in the Confidential. Yeah,
yeah. But I love that scene where he goes and gets his mum, and she just looks at him with tears in her eyes and just a little passing wave. It's beautiful, and then we get Captain Jack.
That's the last time that, well, actually, it's the last time, supposedly, that Sarah Jane sees that doctor. But they filmed the one we discussed last week.
After it, that's right.
But chronologically, it is the last time they see each other.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, and then of course we have Captain Jack in the Star Wars bar. I'm surprised we didn't.
What was
that adipose doing in there? That's too underage to be in the bar.
The adipose is too young.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But and I'm not sure I'm comfortable with the doctor playing hookup for Captain Jack.
But
I've had no problem with that at all.
No, that was all right. There's Princess Leia in the background. Do you see Princess Leia there in the background?
No.
No, shut up. It's definitely a Star Wars bar. Yes, okay. So I think he's a bit of a bit easy, shall we say, Alonso there. He's only just met him, for God's sake. But anyway.
He says,
there's two things.
Where they talk about, can you read my mind or something? And he says, what am I thinking now?
Yeah. There's two things that disturb me about. One, that how easy Alonso is, and two, that he's that young enough to be John Barrowman's son.
Well, definitely Captain Jack's son.
Oh, well, yes.
Great-great-great-great-great-grandson by that time.
The doctor goes to the bookshop next.
Before or after he's been buried underneath Torchwood?
Before.
I think it's after.
Oh, is it after? Okay. Yeah, it's after, because it's after Children of Time, isn't it, that he's at the bar?
Children of Earth.
Yeah, all right, Children of Earth. Sorry, that was your fault. You keep interrupting me. You keep interrupting me. The book by Verity Newman, which the doctor's come to get to buy a copy of. He won't get time to read it, of course, because he's just about to regenerate. But, you know, unless he gets
it. Well,
he's my next reader.
And maybe. Then he turns up at the wedding, and I love the reaction of Donna to actually being married.
The doctor does not take the book with him. He gets it signed, but he doesn't walk away with it.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, I saw that bit.
Well, I saw him pick it up.
Anyway, yeah, as I was saying, the reaction that Donna has to actually being married is great. What? I could have read it quickly. So I heard a blip. I heard you, Robert, I heard you go blip, blip, blip. So I managed to translate that into could have read it quickly. Yes.
Well done. Well done.
Is that the same Neris, by the way, that's been played Neris in previous
episodes? Oh, wait,
episode?
He does pick it up. I'm sorry.
Dear, I'm going to leave that in.
I'm so sorry.
Shame on you.
You're so sorry.
The doctor then turns up at the wedding very nicely and very enigmatically gives a little envelope to Wilf, and then there's another little very sad scene of, because it's obviously he buys a lottery ticket from the dead dad, her husband, and that provokes a bit of a reaction, very emotional reaction, and a quite right emotional, beautiful emotional reaction actually. And Donna realizes
she's a character that you go from hating to quite liking at the end.
And then that's it. There's a sort of very a salute from Wilf.
Actually, did you listen to the music there? It sounded like people singing Ronnie. If you listen to it,
really?
Yeah, if you listen to it, have a listen.
I think you need your ears checked, mate.
Okay, well, I might go back and listen to that.
I do actually.
Okay. After the full series with Donna, and she was always referring to her friend Neris,
yes.
We finally see her.
Obviously, nobody was listening to me about 5 minutes ago when I said, "Is this the same Neris as before?" But never mind. Anyway,
I didn't hear you.
No, that's nice because nobody was listening to me.
You need your hearing checked, Kirby.
You were.
As well.
Right.
Yeah, what was that you
said? That?
Can I just say?
What?
Right. Who said that? This synopsis has taken longer than the episode itself. So can I get back to the episode, please?
It's a two-parter. We need to match them.
Yes.
Well, it's not supposed to be a commentary. True. We might as well have done a commentary the way it's the length it's taking.
Yeah, that's what it feels like.
Right. Right, we've got to the bit now.
It's only 1.5 hours.
Where the doctor has sort of been saluted at by Wilf, and again, very emotional.
Yeah, they have two salutes. Like saluted back the first time, but not the second time.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Right,
did
so.
Did you notice they said that Wilf and Minnie get together as well?
Wilf what? And what?
All Wilf I've got and was, Minnie.
Oh, Wilf and Minnie.
Oh right. Yes. Okay.
Oh, my funny. Goodness, yeah.
Thank you. No, I didn't.
I'm going to catch that bouquet.
Okay, right.
Yes.
Can we move on to the next scene whilst it's still 2013?
No.
No, January the 1st, 2005.
Yes, 2005.
For God's sake. Right, so, next we see Bingo wearing a similar thing to Tom Baker's scarf. It is quite very similar to Tom Baker's scarf, isn't it, if you look at a scarf. And a very final scene for Jackie. Oh. And again, this scene, it's lovely. I quite like this scene, of course. I'm surprised that Bingo didn't remember the face of the Doctor when he regenerates. I'm sure I've seen that face somewhere before.
My geek daughter does not like this scene because of that. She says that Rose should have remembered.
But she might have been a bit tanked up, but never mind.
Yeah. And also, I've got one tiny problem with it. The Doctor should have said, "You're going to have a fantastic year instead of a great year." Like, the Ninth Doctor said.
Good point.
Yes.
Good point. Bit pedantic and finicky.
I know, but
a fairly good point.
I think it would have been fun.
That's our job.
It would have been fun. I agree. Anyway, so Bingo goes off and
why would she remember him? Because Rose didn't broadcast until March 26th of 2005. So this is before the Doctor ever came into her life.
No, but she did. I know,
but when he regenerates into David Tennant, she would have seen him.
What we're trying to say is, that
even Eccleston hasn't shown up yet.
No.
Yes, but in her life. Surely she'd recognise a face, David Tennant's face, him at the beginning of the year.
But he's regenerated. But it says, "I met that guy down an alleyway."
Would you please allow me to explain? Please allow
you're saying recognise him later.
Yeah.
Yes.
What I'm trying to say is that when the Doctor regenerated into the face of the 10th Doctor, God, I'm getting confused, it would have been acceptable for Rose to think there's something familiar about that face.
Yes.
Yeah. They hadn't written this last episode yet.
No, I accept that. But that would have been quite cool, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, but it was in the shadows. He was in the shadows and everything.
Yes.
Sorry?
He was in the shadows?
Yes, and she could have had a bit of drink before as well.
Oh, I'm going to need a stiff drink. I might have to go and get myself a drink before we move on to the feedback of this, right?
Apache.
Was that a new song by Shadows? Apache.
Yeah, we should before the feedback. We should all go off to get our drink and then carry on as the TARDIS Tavern.
Right now, can I please? This is an official request. Carry on with the what have we got here? 6 minutes and 2 seconds of this episode, and try and actually get it through in less than two minutes. 6 minutes and 2 seconds.
Sure.
Now, there's a bit in which, before Bingo runs off into the flats...
Oh. Stop calling her that!
No!
The Doctor sort of goes, like that, and she turns around and says, "Are you all right, mate?" Which is, again, when I was watching the original episode, the fact that you went, reminded me a little bit of when...
you on the previous episodes? Oh, no, that was farting,
sorry. Be quiet! When the Fifth Doctor got back to the TARDIS with Perry, and he operated the console, and this went, and then sort of gave Perry the bat's milk, and then collapsed. But that little grunt he made, it was a bit, reminded me of that particular scene.
Ah, I think you're right. It may have been intentional.
Mm. Anyway,
that's
so
what you get for holding back regeneration.
The Doctor starts struggling back to the TARDIS, and I quite like this scene because of the fact that the TARDIS goes all out of focus, and he's really, and you feel the scene with him. Come on, get back there, and he sort of halfway through, he seems to give up and collapses on the floor. And then we see Ood Sigma, and it's so. And this is the bit that we will sing you to your rest. I think it says words to that effect.
You know what they were singing? They were singing "Om Mani Padme Hum." If you listen, if you listen,
I happen to know they're not.
Yeah. I heard them. They're not.
Anyway.
So one of the nonsense syllables is. He says it's poly, 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 poly.
Put the kettle on.
Yes.
I have to know they're singing Valet de Chem, which is Farewell 10. We set Robert off.
Can we continue?
Yes. No,
I think Adam's just died. Oh, he's given up.
Yes.
Like the Doctor. He's
is it worth me continuing? I might as well just shut up and let you carry on. Right, I'm going to get myself a drink. I've had enough.
All right. Now we could get started.
Yeah, really.
Finally, he's gone.
I say it took us an hour and a half to finally get rid of him.
Yeah.
40 minutes.
Yeah, you're right.
The show. Is he going to edit us out now?
Probably.
I know a lot of people complained it was very sappy and emotional that he went to say goodbye to people, but I didn't mind that. The thing I did mind was Ood Sigma turning up. I thought that was a bit over the top.
I was really into this moment.
A sense of a funeral.
Yeah. I just thought it was a bit too much. I don't mind the Doctor going to things, but with things coming to him... I thought
why was Ood Sigma showing up?
Maybe they were holding hands.
When they were singing Kumbaya?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay.
They had a sense of like a funeral gathering is how that felt. I didn't like that.
Yeah.
Mm. Excuse me, I have actually paused it. I only went off to get the drink.
You wandered off.
No, I'm going back to where I was now, thank you.
No, right. You're not. We've missed
Yes,
on.
I am. Nope.
No.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Nope, I'm sorry. I'm editing that bit out.
Backwards.
Yes.
I told you, Mary. I told you.
Yeah, we're edited out.
Right. So, as I was saying, the bit where it's probably from the moment that the Ood says, "We will sing you to your rest." That's the moment that my throat started getting a little bit, starting to sort of tense up a little bit at this point.
Well, mine happened a long time before that.
No, this is a point that my throat started to tense. And it was a bit annoying because Deb had some customers in the other room and there were some people sitting around waiting to have their hair cut. And I was watching this and my throat starting to tense up and my eyes were starting to sting a little bit. And Isabella was going, "Is the Doctor going to die?" And I was going, "Yes!" Very quickly, so just stop myself. And, go, yes! And of course, we see that him looking at his hand and operating the TARDIS so as it can be flying around Earth, ready for the next episode. And of course, yeah. And then he says, "I don't want to go." And then the regeneration itself. And then we see Matt Smith. Now, the thing that made me feel more emotional, and I was slightly emotional watching it first on a little bit. I was more interested in seeing the regeneration, but watching it as we have done now. It's the first time I've watched it and felt really emotional. And I think it's because we see Matt Smith and we've seen 3 years of him. And it's, the emotional thing is actually seeing him appear.
Yeah.
And see him and David Tennant go. So that it's the same effect I get when I watch back the Eccleston Tennant regeneration because we know what we're going to get from Tennant. And it makes it the impact of that regeneration now more moving for me, and it's very moving. Definitely. It's incredible. And I love
kind of ruin the moving effect of that. He does copy Rassilon and spit at the TARDIS.
Yes. But the
fire near his mouth, he goes, oh dear.
The scene with Matt Smith is a lot longer than I remembered it as well. It went on a bit longer.
Yes. Right?
And it's very consistent with the way he is when he's manic, mm-hmm. when he's in manic doctor mode.
Yes.
So
legs. Obviously
I still got legs.
The character pretty
good.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm still not
fingers,
a ginger.
Lots of fingers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ears, yes.
Fingers,
eyes, too.
Nose. Fingers,
I've
nose.
I'm a girl.
Yeah, I'm a girl.
I'm a girl.
Yeah, he spits at the console. Yeah, you're right. I did notice actually at the time. And then the TARDIS starts
flying towards
there's
her. Fire and debris flying everywhere.
And then he says his not very often used catchphrase of Geronimo, and he's hardly ever used that.
But we were all afraid that it was going to become a catchphrase.
Yeah, but I mean, it's supposed to be quite nice that he only uses it in very dire situations, so it's about right, really, isn't it? And that was it. Now, before
you're going to say that at the beginning of the next episode we record, aren't you?
Am I?
Never mind.
Anyway, right. Now, I was watching this because I've heard so many people saying that they hate it and stuff like that. I thought I'd better watch this and try not to like it.
Watch it subjectively.
All I can say about it is that I love it, but there are some slightly annoying things in it. But on the whole, I thoroughly enjoy it. I could watch this over and over again.
Yeah, I love it.
It's just so brilliant.
But I can't see how people have it as their least favourite episode. It is filled with just wonderful.
That, yeah.
There are some very self-indulgent things, but it was Russell T. Davies' last story.
Well,
it was David Tennant's last
story. I don't
see it
as self-indulgent. I see it as indulgent for all of us.
Rich.
We saw that. They're celebrating stuff that the 10th Doctor and we, the viewers, have been through.
No, you're turning into Robert now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, but did you hear what I was saying?
More or less, yeah.
Yeah.
Enough that I leave it in, yeah.
It does have that sense of celebrating the whole 10th Doctor era to it, which I didn't mind at all.
Yeah. But like I say, I will emphasise, I understand what certain people find annoying, because I find them annoying. I find certain aspects of it a little bit irritating. Yeah. But on the whole...
Master being resurrected, a few things like that.
No, I've got a problem with that. No, it's all right. I find his eating irritating and stuff like that, you know, and the fact that he's...
Oh, that didn't bother me at all.
Because he's been contaminated, he's not quite... If his process of resurrection from this magical potion had gone correctly, then, of course, he wouldn't be hungry and eating things, so that's fine. I've got a problem with that. Mm-hmm. It's just some mildly irritating things, but on the whole, it's just such a joy to watch. The music is amazing. It really does lend itself to the story.
Yep.
Actually, speaking of that, some of you have criticised the specials for not being not having a big scale to them, but I think the music has all the way through them. It's been quite grand, and sometimes it celebrates, if that's the right word, it can celebrate things. It's just grand and powerful, and even if maybe the episodes, the next Doctor I'm looking at you, didn't quite live up to it.
Mm. So we're talking about ranking Christmas specials. This, of course, was a New Year's special.
Yeah.
However, if this
it was shown on Christmas and then it was shown on New Year's.
But this
Day.
Particular episode was technically
the last one, special.
Because episode two far outweighs episode one.
It was actually shown later here in Australia, but we might talk about that, shall we?
It was shown on Valentine's Day, which is quite.
I know
that
the
ironic.
Doctor Who podcast say that episode one is better than episode two, but I dispute that. Episode two for me is much better than episode
one. I both enjoy them.
Mm, they're both the same, but I say episode two is better than episode one. But if this had been all shown on Christmas Day, this for me would be the best Christmas special.
It would have been a damn long one.
Well, it's just about.
I agree with you there, Adam.
Not as long as Titanic, and that's been shown on Christmas Day before.
Oh, God.
Right then, so that's my view on it. I'm sorry, people that hate it, but I did try not to like it, and I did. There are irritations.
I'm sure that just because other people don't like it.
I don't hate it.
I'm not saying about... No, but not you, Kirby. I know there's things you didn't like about it because you said at the beginning of the show. But there are people that detest this episode because it is all what they hate about RTD. Go on. I'm really interested to hear what you have to say about it, Kirby.
Basically, what you said, there are some absolutely fantastic scenes in it, all the Wilf stuff. My biggest problem with it is the magic with bringing the Master back.
That's because it's in the other room. Sorry.
And remember, my first Doctor was the fourth Doctor. So, Legopolis falling from a telescope, that should kill a Doctor. So, sorry.
But that was a different body, though. I can.
Yeah,
that's my justification.
I can't, sorry.
That.
I agree with Royce now with that one, yeah.
But, so it's not my favorite. But I don't dislike it. And I remember watching it over and over again to try and get some clues for the upcoming season series.
Clues? What clues?
Well, there were none. I was hoping that there were.
But we did get a little flash forward, didn't we?
Let's put
it there. Yeah.
It was so tantalizing seeing those little sort of clips together of Matt Smith and Gary Gillan.
Even though I didn't watch all of the Confidentials this time around, I did fast forward through one of them, and
must have been the second one.
I think it was the first one. There's a scene with David.
You mentioned about Luke looking, not looking where he's crossing the road, and that was in the second one.
Well, yeah, but I remember that from when I first saw that Confidential. Oh, okay. But in this case, I was watching it the other night. I think it was last night. And there's a scene where David Tennant is singing with the Proclaimers, and at the it's in the second one. Fine. Anyway, we didn't realize at the time what was going on, because that was years before we saw the final video with that they made.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's it.
Thank you, Mary. What do you think?
Well, I did not want to watch these because I knew it was the end of the 10th Doctor era, and I knew it would make me sad, and I didn't want to live through that. And I don't want to watch it again for the same reason. Even though I love Matt Smith, and I think he's made a great Doctor, I still, you know, because we've been steeped in the 10th Doctor era so, that I still feel an emotional attachment to him. From this,
will, I think.
And these, I thought, you know, it's a hot mess, really. You know, it's the over the top stuff, it's silly stuff, it's stuff that doesn't make sense, and then there's a lot of brilliant stuff in it.
Yeah.
And then there's the great, you know, the great farewell, which I'm glad he did, because you feel like you need to. You're that invested in the character that you do want to have a big farewell. So, you know, that's it. I loved it. I hated it. Didn't want to watch it. We'll probably never watch it again.
Really?
I'm going to watch it more often now. I love it.
I keep going back and watching it. I don't have any problems.
You do need to fit two and a half hours.
Maybe I don't like goodbyes.
But I did watch this in two separate days, this episode. So.
I did
too.
Me
too.
I was planning on watching it all last night, and I fell asleep.
That bad.
Okay. Robert, let's hope your audio stays together long enough for you to say what you thought.
I absolutely loved watching it again. And when I first watched it, I really thought the end bit was unnecessary with, you know, saying goodbye to everyone and, you know, the falling from the sky and all that kind of. But this time I watched it and I thought it was absolutely brilliant from start to finish. And, I mean, you can still have bugbears about these things, but as recently with the falling from the sky, it was a different body in Legopolis. Yeah, you can look at the things that way. Each Doctor is different, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. But also, but, each person, Robert, each person sort of makes excuses up for certain things.
Oh, yeah. I know.
You know what I mean? Like, their own interpretation.
It's different writers, etc.
Yeah,
you know,
it's an interpretation type of thing. And if you like Doctor Who enough, you will try and make excuses for it. And that's fine. I've got a problem with that.
And I've got to say, fair enough that Kirby doesn't accept that, because Tom was your first Doctor, right?
Yes.
You've got a lot of affection for him, and I've got quite a bit of affection for Tennant. He wasn't my first, but he was certainly my favourite by the time we saw this. He was just outstanding, and I was younger than I am now, and I saw the fun he has, and I loved
that. In the past, you were younger?
I know, it's surprising, isn't it?
It's in Australia.
It's very surprising. I don't know how I did it, but, I just justified it that way because.
But you live in the future.
I know, it's wibbly wobbly timey wimey, and my lips can get around.
Kirby, behave yourself.
I have to step away for a minute. So.
Oh, good grief.
We've offended him.
I was just saying it's fair enough that he wouldn't accept the Doctor falling. It was unlikely, and in real life there wouldn't be much left of him if he did fall from that distance, but mm-hmm. I can justify it by saying it's a different body, and it works for me.
I sort of fell apart from when I knew Wilf was going to start knocking on the glass. That sort of got
what,
me.
What, emotionally?
And from that moment on, yeah.
Yeah.
I found it riveting. From that, I mean, it was entertaining anyway. But that was a moment I did not want to, you know, if anybody interrupted it, I got really cross because I really wanted to listen and watch those parts really intensely. But the bit that got me was the bit where he started staggering across the music, and then the Ood saying, "We will sing you to your rest." Those words and that music and the way it was shot and acted and everything, that was. And then of course the bit that really got me was when you saw Matt Smith's face appear. Because I think, no, you just think now, we've got him, we've got Matt Smith now, he's the Doctor, he's going to be the Doctor of the 50th anniversary. Mm. He's very much the Doctor, as we are now. And, you know, it was a sort of thing, look what we're going to get from him. Because at the time, it was, what are we going to get?
I know.
Will it be as good as what we've just seen and things like that?
It's all changed and it's all wonderful, you know. It was so exciting to see his face appear in that episode, which was an amazing episode.
I was quite
episode.
Torn up watching the TARDIS blow up. That was sad.
It was on fire, but it wasn't on fire at the beginning of the next episode, as we'll find out.
It was. There were a few bits of flame.
Not as in fire.
He's back, front and sides.
He's back, front and sides.
Front and sides.
Right, so we move on to feedback. Because this is going to be a very long episode this week, and I do apologise, listeners. Well,
it wasn't my fault. They were long episodes.
But the idea was,
unfortunately, as soon as my wife gets home, I'm going to have to go downstairs and eat dinner. So
this is what I was saying.
Dinner time.
Well, stop interrupting me then, because I will warn you.
Yeah, she gets off of work in 5 minutes, and then
the Dr. Phil's feedback is 15 minutes long.
Crikey.
Oh, dear.
Yes.
Wow.
So
can I
get on then, please?
Yeah.
It's a long episode.
Yeah, well, I'm going to carry on anyway. Right, we have some written feedback here from Gareth Lloyd. And he says, "Hello, 20 megabiters." That we're biting people, but never mind.
Yeah. Now,
hello, Gareth.
Like the master. Now, the end of time seems to get a lot of stick off people these days. For me, it is a suitable epic conclusion to Tennant's era, and the performances are great. The standout being Bernard Cribbins, who is wonderfully moving in it. I mean, wonderfully moving, as in, you know, means, I should say.
Well, he walks around and he does that in the space and he does all sorts of things.
You're wasting your own time, Kirby. You're wasting your own time. I didn't know the Time Lords were coming back, so that was a huge surprise. And the whole thing bombs along with just the right amount of incident and humour throughout. Now, as far as the extended goodbye sequences, well, I know loads of people have a problem with them, but I loved seeing all the old faces, and the scene at Donna's wedding was hugely moving. The only negative is that I am not sure about the 10th Doctor's final line, but this is a small niggle in a great piece of television. Mm. So, thanks everyone for a great show, and I really enjoyed the Daphne Ashbrook interview. All the best, Gareth. Thank you, Gareth.
Thank you, Gareth.
Yeah, I agree.
That final line bothers me too. You know, do we want to remember that Doctor sounding sad and reluctant, and you know, saying something that sounds like he's whining?
It's not the worst final line. The worst final line was, of course, carrot juice.
Thank you. Keep warm.
Is this some sort of joke? No, I refuse to be treated in... What are you doing? Stop! You're making me giddy.
No!
You can't do this to me!
No. No.
No! No! No!
Here, Sarah Jane. Now don't cry. While there's life, there's...
It's the end. But the moment has been prepared for.
Adric?
You know, I think I was rash in turning down that offer of the presidency.
Oh, carrot juice.
Timing malfunction. The master. He's out there.
I've got to stop.
Sounds better. Right. Where to next? No. Where was I? Oh, no. Not again.
Rose. Before I go, I just want to tell you, you were fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Do you know what? So was I. I don't want to go.
Clara! Oswald! Oswald!
Watch me run.
Right, we have some more written feedback. This is from Tom. No, pardon?
He didn't know that, did he?
Who? Oh, you mean Baker. Colin Baker? No, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, Thomas, for your feedback.
Yes, being sorry.
Thomas Reyes, and he says, "Hello, 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast. I was never a sci-fi enthusiast, but all that changed with Doctor Who. And I came to love... Sorry, I came into my love for the programme in the Tennant era, and I remember the bittersweet anticipation I felt for my Doctor's final story. I was sure after watching RTD's brilliant Children of Earth that we were going to get something at the very least would be equally as good, but we didn't. End of Time is terrible. It's so terrible.
Okay, stop reading. Enough. Yeah.
Be no quiet. It's so terrible that it's almost depressing. I believe Tennant deserved better.
What?
Perhaps a story would have been better served if the specials were scrapped in favour of making this story a five-parter. It may have given RTD a better opportunity to flesh out and pace his ideas to better effect, and the less said about the Master, the better. On the positive, David Tennant and Bernard Cribbins gave fantastic performances and have wonderful chemistry, which is what I said earlier on. Nearly every scene they have together is gold. The reveal of Wilf being the one who will knock four times was very well done. The dog has just burst into the room and scared the living daylights out of me.
The dog burst?
No, I thought that was Deb. I thought that was Deb. I thought, oh God, that's the end of the podcast. That was Star flapping her ears.
Sorry, it was me. Sorry.
Right, back to the beginning of that sentence. The reveal of Wilf being the one who will knock four times was very well done, and I also found the Doctor's final goodbye to his companions incredibly moving. Thanks again for the wonderful entertainment you provide, and keep up the great work. Thank you, Thomas.
Yeah. I'm sorry for interrupting you so much.
And he has a good point in that the other specials we did not like very much, so maybe...
No, you didn't.
Maybe writing this one out into more episodes would have, you know, fleshed these ideas out better.
Like Children of Earth.
No, but then we would have gotten rid of stuff like Planet of the Dead and Waters of Mars, which I do like.
Yeah,
I don't mind Waters of Mars as much.
It's a bit frustrating that, you know, if you the way you look at the way Doctor Who's made at the moment, there's like two half series now, isn't it? They had enough in the specials to make a half series, and just they should have just done it as the half series at the end of the year instead of.
Speaking of which, Moffat, we don't want a 3D 50th anniversary special. We want the first half of 8A. Thank you very much.
Do we?
Yeah. Do we?
Okay. I have no objection to the 3D thing since I found that they're probably likely to be showing it in the local cinema.
See, what I'm afraid of is they might not show it here.
Oh. Yes, that's what I'm...
Or here.
Wait and see.
Back to Thomas's letter. What was I going to say? this did feel like there was so much crammed into these two episodes.
It was.
I like his idea. I would like to have seen it.
It's a bit of the similar sort of pace.
It's pretty simple, really.
It's a similar sort of pace that the cartoon one that we talked about last week, wasn't it? Really. This is Jeff Waddell. He says, and I hope he's not expecting me to do this in the accent he's outlining here. Hootsmon. I would like this read out in a Scottish accent. Oh dear. Which is what Tennant should have been allowed to use instead of his Dick Van Dyke travesty.
I agree.
In respect to In respect to Rhys, I promise I will be gentle. Good points.
Oh.
Wilf. The reveal of the Time Lords and the last 30 seconds. Bad points. Everything else.
All right, stop reading.
The Harry Potter potion. The Doctor smelling another Time Lord. Thank goodness it wasn't the Master from The Deadly Assassin. He was literally rotten. The 4-hour long Master laughing scene. The author having the incestuous affair with his daughter. Yeah, we alluded to that earlier on. Didn't we?
That was disturbing.
Mm. The fact that the doctor had implanted a safety barrier in Donna's mind.
I loved that.
The Harry Potter Rassilon raid.
That was my oldest daughter.
Brilliant sneeze. That is one of the best sneezes we've ever had on the 20 Megabyte podcast. And right in the middle of Jeff Waddell's feedback.
Yes, to cover it up.
The Doctor falling 80 feet onto a stone floor and being alive, another superpower such as the Master's lightning bolts. The knock four time scenario, where in the Waters of Mars the Doctor had said he knew it was, and I don't even want to think about the whole visiting companions thing. Because it makes me ill. The Ood.
There's something wrong with you, Jeff.
Why? The whole I don't want to go thing. Well, I wish you'd have gone before the specials because they were a waste of time. And this was a travesty.
No and no.
I don't hate Tennant, but he certainly isn't one of my favourites. I think some of the stories, Impossible Planet, Satan Pit, Girl in the Fireplace, were some of the best ever. But even my missus, who loved Tennant, was glad to see the back of him. There's not many episodes of Who I will ever watch again.
Really?
Shush. But these two are certainly ones I won't watch again. I'm sure there's things I've missed, but I've put a mind barrier in my head, so I...
Yeah, just listen to the episode, the review we just did, where we mentioned everything that's brilliant about it, and that's what you missed.
So I don't have to ever think about the whole sorry mess. Oh god, he's not going to listen to this episode then, is he? Worst Doctor ending ever. See what I did there?
I completely disagree.
Even worse than Colin Baker ending. See?
No.
Told you I'd be gentle and well balanced. Keep up the good work and thanks for everything. If I ever figure out how to record things, I will do it and send in.
And use a computer and a microphone.
Then it says Slainth Mahar, Jeff. What does that mean? Slainth Mahar.
Is it Dadoon for something?
Is that like an impression of Robert's internet connection or something?
Slainth Mahar.
Only the listeners would have heard that gag. But never mind.
I heard it.
Did you? What do I say then?
Yeah. Is it an impression of Robert's internet connection?
Oh. Yeah. Well, you could have laughed or something. That would have been.
And I would have if it was funny.
Right now.
Well, hopefully he is upset enough with you the way you read it that he will make the effort to send us audio
Mary,
feedback.
No,
then he can do the Scottish accent and everything.
I've never reputed to be able to read stuff out. This is why I prefer to.
Well, no,
audio.
He said he wanted it read in a Scottish accent, which you didn't do.
I'm not
so
being funny, but I also have a problem reading stuff out. Full stop. Putting a Scottish accent to it. It's just above and beyond.
That's right. That's right. So knowing what you're dealing with, you need to send in your own.
I can hear the garage door opening here. My wife is home and dinner is about to be served.
So you're going to
Oh, Kirby, where are your priorities?
The girls cook dinner, so...
So you're going to cook the dog dinner. Right, okay. That's my job.
No.
You're going to be all right.
So just someone let me know when you guys decide we're going to record next week. I can do either Sunday or Monday.
Well, as we've done two Sundays, it's going to be a Monday.
We've done three Sundays.
It's Monday.
So Monday.
Monday next
so,
week.
So I will talk to you guys next week.
Okay.
See you, Kirby. Okay.
Thank you, Kirby.
Sorry. Enjoy your dinner.
Bye.
Yes,
bye.
Goodbye. I'll enjoy my breakfast.
Pardon me.
I think Adam probably enjoyed his.
Right.
It's Malibu and Coke.
Goodness gracious me. Right, now...
You did have a Malibu and Coke, did you?
Yeah. It's nearly gone now. I'm feeling a lot calmer.
Milk and Malibu's nice as well.
Is it? I'm feeling a lot calmer than I was before I started drinking a glass of Malibu and Coke. Right, let's see if we can get through some of this audio feedback.
Yes.
Hope it doesn't wake Deb up because there's a lot of it. And where are we now on this recording? 2 hours and 12 minutes. It's a very long, very long show. But I have got this particular bit of audio feedback.
That's what she said.
But you've got the power. You can always edit it down.
Not much. Not much.
The power.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast. This is Ian Kirk.
Does
that prevent John Barrowman being in the 50th anniversary? Will that blow a hole in the universe? There is a new children's show on the BBC called Old Jack's Boat, with Bernard Cribbins and Freema Agyeman. Yes, it was a pity about Rory dying again in The Angels Take Manhattan, but he did get deaded quite often.
Yeah, I did. I'm fed up with being deaded every week.
I'm recording this on Wednesday. A small asteroid is going to fly past the Earth on Friday. I have read an internet conspiracy theory that it is not small, and this is not going to miss. If civilization has collapsed by the time you hear this, remember Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy advice on building a civilization. The secret is to bang the rocks together, guys.
Pardon me.
That was my chair. End of Time by Russell T. Davies. Not J.K. Rowling. The Companions are back again for another finale. The Doctor's going potty. And the Master is going potter. With magic potions, and now he can fly. The Master becomes everyone on Earth. Even. Well, I don't think that really is the American president. I would have to see his birth certificate. The good parts are Wolf, the Vin Voce, the Companions. The not-so-good parts are the White Point Star of Rassilon, introducing a mysterious old woman in RTD's final story, jumping out of a spaceship, Martha's marriage to Mickey, shades of Leela and Perry having unexpected romances, the witches in the prison bringing the Master back through his ring.
Wait.
The Master is brought back, even though he's been shot, died and cremated. The writers can now bring back any character, but not Adric. There was a moving scene in the classic series where Tom Baker's Doctor wonders if he has the right to wipe out the entire Dalek race. These days they usually do get entirely wiped out. I think that is what makes them so grumpy. The senior production crew and Tennant were off to try a new life in Los Angeles. This is reflected in the Doctor's apprehension about his regeneration. You might think that was a bit self-serving. The Vimbocci look like conkers. That is a sort of inedible nut. In The Hobbit, Bilbo says he is good at conkers. A game of trying to break conkers threaded on string.
Yes.
The Doctor meeting Rose earlier in her timeline than before was a nice touch. Bye for now.
Yes. Bye, Ian.
Thank you, Ian. Right,
he came.
I just need to repair my sides because I've just split. Banana split.
Yeah.
Well, I thought it was funny. Right.
I know you did.
I really didn't want to put some news into this episode, but we really haven't got enough time. So I'm just checking. Oh, what's this? Eighth Doctor Adventures promotion. No, they're doing something on Big Finish. Before we finished the episode with Dr. Phil's. He did tell me to edit it down, but tell me one person in the universe that would be prepared to edit down Dr. Phil.
Yeah.
Really?
Yes. there's some footage of the Daleks in London. Mm. That's really interesting. I'm going to watch that later.
Adam.
Pardon?
Remember last week you mentioned about the... No, I just said it once. No, do you remember last week you said about the 10th Planet DVD?
Yeah, they're going to... Yeah.
And Reese goes and posts that, and I thought, how apt.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Spooky, in fact. But yeah, that'd be good, wouldn't it? I hope they do that. But I hope the animation's better quality than the pictures they showed on the news page.
Oh, I just realised what you said, Robert. Yeah, that is cool. No, I kind of caught up. I was thinking, I heard...
Yeah, but fortunately for me, there's not much else on the Doctor Who news page, but it's quite exciting, all this footage we're seeing in relation to, and I've just closed it down. What a donut.
I'm getting more excited about that than I am about the actual 50th anniversary special.
Right then, we've got our last bit of audio feedback from somebody called Dr. Philip W. Cerner. And as I've warned you, it's quite long. In fact, it's almost
as
long.
That's
what she said. It's almost as long as the episode itself. So I do hope this doesn't wake any of my household up. And here goes, and I do hope he drives carefully.
Yes.
Hello, everyone at the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast. Adam, Mary, Reese, Kirby,
hello.
Robert, Ian Kirk,
hello.
Matthew, you know, everyone, even Jim the Fish. Just sending in my thoughts on the end of time, which I always seem to keep thinking of Siobhan Galishan calling the end of Tom Baker the end of Tom Part 1, the end of Tom Part 2. But I think it's very easy to lambast the end of time as being a mess. I think I'm going to lay out the things I think that don't work about it and the things I think that do work about it. Because I think there's some positives, just as there are negatives to be found in, well, many Doctor Who episodes. Do I think that the Year of Specials was successful? I would probably say that The Waters of Mars is by far the most successful, but I would say that, in a way, I don't think it's a fitting end to someone who I thought was actually a very, very consistently good Doctor. You take stories such as Human Nature, Silence in the Library... I mean, Series 4 had a run of particularly good stories, and while I'm not a particular fan of its conclusion, I would say that that was probably the strongest season, all of the above, of Doctor Who in the new the RTD era.
Season.
Now, the things that let down the end of time the most, I would have to say Russell T. Davis' script, while great with character... I don't think it's very clear with concept. I do think that there's lots of great moments. The older lady who could ambiguously be the Doctor's mother, I think that would be terribly corny. Ambiguously could have been Susan. I think that
Susan,
is a lot
Susan.
More interesting and could be something that gets
tied
up
with the Susan before.
Because that would have been, I thought, very compelling and interesting.
It could be Susan.
The opening scene in the church with the TARDIS and the stained glass window. very neat, right. Easily, I mean, it's something that was not picked up on for the rest of the story, which is a pity, something that's a plot thread that, hey, someone else later could do something with, but I would say that if anything in this story, you know, was not even necessary, potions to bring back the master. Now, I would say you take a story like The Daemons, and that's a place where you have magic paraded around and described scientifically. Unfortunately, you just get the kind of Harry Potter, a resurrection of the master. And there was one thing that always sat really badly with me from the end of time was not the show itself. And I remember listening to the commentary on iTunes with RTD and Julie Gardner, and just the complete disdain that the author has for anyone who is looking at the episode critically, really kind of hit me in a really wrong and negative way and kind of arrogant. But that, if you listen back to, if you can find a copy of it, or if it's even on the DVD, I don't tend to listen to a lot of commentaries very often, but nonetheless, I thought the millionaire who is building this arch was not really a particularly necessary character, especially after the first part. He's relegated to non-existence.
Good point.
The master race, I think, is a great pun. I'm not sure if it's something to end the story on, but I must admit that when the closing of the episode happened with the end narration, and it swings over, and there's Timothy Dalton as president of the Time Lords, I cheered. I must admit, I loved that. And I think I watched that closing sequence about 20 times. After recording it when it first aired, I thought I just cheered. I was very excited about it. I was very disappointed they had to make him Rassilon. Did not think that was necessary at all. It makes continuity. It's one of those things that could have been just left ambiguous and it would not have messed up continuity in any way, but I think it makes a mess out of classic series, if not Big Finish continuity. But nonetheless, the best strengths of these stories, I would say, I'm going to start with commenting on Murray Gold's score. While there's a few moments in Waters of Mars where some of the electronic music is kind of overpowering, Gadget, when they're riding around on Gadget. That I thought that the tone dramatically shifted musically in The End of Time. Mm. And listening back to interviews and reading up that he recorded The End of Time Part 1 and Part 2 during the same sessions for which he recorded The 11th Hour, that's what struck me, because I remembered watching the first few minutes of The 11th Hour going, okay, Murray Gold's still scoring it. And there's something familiar about the bombastic heavy brass usage that he uses at the opening of The 11th Hour, and then the tone dramatically shifts right after the opening credits, which also helps because he has a new theme. But I would say that the seriousness that Murray Gold scores The End of Time is probably one of the better parts of The End of Time. And the last scene, of course, after Tennant says goodbye to Rose, the one missed opportunity in dialogue was that he really should have said that her next year was going to be fantastic.
Yes.
That was the line I was waiting for.
Someone mentioned her.
Nonetheless,
I've heard that.
The closing scene for Tennant, while I'm in the camp that thinks that, while I think his tirade about I have so much more time when after Wilf knocks the three times, that's great. You know, the I don't want to go. You know, I mean, Peter Davison left with more heroism than that. Now, you know, of course, the grand tour around the galaxy, yeah, I would say that's not so self-indulgent for the Doctor as it is for the production team, which was a bit silly. I did think that saying goodbye to Redfern's granddaughter was kind of very touching and unique.
That's the only one I could dumb it out with.
Of the farewell sequence. And, you know, you have the in-joke of the fact that the Doctor saves Luke walking across the street because in Sarah Jane Adventures no one looks where they're going while they're walking across streets. So that's kind of an interesting in-joke. Jack being visited by the Doctor, kind of closing the fact that he, of course, had to kill his own grandson at the end of Children of Earth. Yep. That was very touching. A good way to forgive him by giving him access to a one-night stand. Uh-huh. maybe is not the best dramatic way to end a Doctor Who episode.
I agree.
But I digress. I would say that the music at the end of the episode and destroying the console room, while maybe not, you know, not a great reason to destroy the console room, made for great visuals and great setup for the beginning of the next regime.
Yeah.
So I never have a problem with that. That image of the TARDIS, you know, tumbling its way through the atmosphere and heading towards Earth. And I will be one to admit, I've taken my video editing software, edited the end of the End of Time Part 2 and the beginning of the 11th hour of the pre-title sequence just to see how well it flows, and the only thing it's missing is when Matt Smith takes the coat off. But big deal. Small detail, not particularly important. But I particularly love Matt Smith's opening sequence at the end of the story, and when you've watched The Confidential, they spend a lot of time. I mean, Moffat, of course, scripted it, and Uris Lynn still directed it, but they spent a lot of time to get that right, and I would have to say that ending, kind of in a similar way to the end of Caves of Androzani, made me very optimistic for what was to come. One thing that is exceptional about the End of Time is, despite its faults of an incoherent plot of, okay, we've got to find a way to turn the master race thing around in the second part, you know, with the magic wave of the magic gauntlet of death, I appreciated it. Thought it was very cool that he had a
it was a Rassilon, thank you very much.
Take people out of time and destroy them. I thought that was really cool. But in the opening sequence of Part 2, just as the close of Part 1, was really neat. I'm one who was a little disappointed that we had monochromatic Time Lords, but I'm sure that, you know, in times of war, and it's happened over here in the United States before, not to get terribly political, but... you know, you don't see the different chapters in Time Lord society because there seems to be only one color scheme amongst these Time Lords. And same sort of thing happened for people like in my own family who were kind of called out for not being particularly outwardly patriotic after 9/11 by not wearing pins and T-shirts and things with the flag on it. And so you can imagine in a state of emergency, all sorts of things happen where there seems to be a push for a unity of singular vision. And in the case, unlike the case of the United States, but in the case of Doctor Who, Rassilon was, of course, resurrected as a despot. So there we go. You know, so that's also singularity of vision. Oh, singularity. That's a little Three Doctors pun to throw in. Also, Wilf, stunning performance from both he and David Tennant. I felt that Donna was not necessary at all to the plot. I'm considering the wonderful dramatic thrust of the closing shots of Waters of Mars as a Doctor is thrust into the emergency that is the End of Time, that the opening has so little energy and peril. And I love the fact that the end of Waters of Mars sets up. I mean, it really makes you feel like, okay, Waters of Mars... RTD's The Empire Strikes Back. Let's see what the Return of the Jedi is going to be like. Oh, and then he shows up on the Ood Sphere after taking his grand tour around the universe. Which I'm one who did not particularly like Matt Smith doing the same thing. But anyway, I would, you know, Tennant's performance, fabulous despite the content. Wilf, pitch perfect. Love the winning lottery ticket, the wedding, and some of the visuals in the story that I most appreciated is as the Doctor's leaving the wedding. You know, there's a real autumnal feel as he is. That's the last time Wilf is going to see the Doctor.
Yeah.
Now, would it have been nice to have had the David Tennant step up in the radiation chamber and be Matt Smith? Or have something where someone else is in the TARDIS, and Wilf gets dropped off at the end after seeing the Doctor reborn. That might have been a neat thing to do too. But knowing from the writer's tale is that it was a very last minute script, you know, completed at the last minute with a lot of ideas that were not completely fully baked. You know, and considering that the tone meeting they have in The Confidential is, what's the tone of the last story for Tennant? The best. You know, we want this to be the best. Well, best starts from the script. And while Mr. Davis is great with character, plot is not his strongest suit. And I think for him, unfortunately, it was not a really good way for him nor David Tennant to go out on. And Series 4 might have benefited from having a year off than a year of specials. But nonetheless, that's just my humble opinion. I would say that does the bad outweigh the good of the end of time? No. Does the good outweigh the bad in the end of time? No. Does it make for discussions that fandom will have for probably decades to come?
Yes.
You bet. And I think it's probably the best we could hope for out of any Doctor Who. You know, controversy is always a helpful thing. It keeps people talking and it keeps people thinking. And I, for one, am grateful that RTD had the courage and vision to bring Doctor Who back.
Yep.
Now, you know, everyone always has their best moments and their worst moments. But nonetheless, I think that we, that as Doctor Who fans, we owe him a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that even for his own, and he even comments that he did not want to have the co-credit authorship on episodes in the specials year because he would often rewrite large portions of episodes. Fires of Pompeii, practically a Robert Holmes page one rewrite. So he has the quality and the writing chops and the ideas of how to deal with issues and scripts and make them better. You know, so a story like that, he took someone's skeleton with a really strong plot and made it significantly better. And I think for him, he comments that by taking a co-credit in those stories in the specials year, it kind of takes away the fact that he actually had any hand in any of the scripts that did not bear his name on them. So, nonetheless, that's a whole other can of worms to think about. But I can't wait to hear what you guys have to say about the end of time. And I'm sure that while we probably might agree and disagree on things, nonetheless, it is exciting that this is the closing of one chapter of Doctor Who before, as a show, you embark on the next one.
Indeed.
Take care, everybody. Keep up the great work, and bye-bye.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dr.
The song
Phil.
Ends, but the story continues.
Yeah. And thank you very much for getting through that feedback without crashing your car.
Yes.
And, yes.
And the weirdest thing about it was Kirby, having said goodbye, was still there after all.
Yeah. What brought you back, Kirby?
I went downstairs and they said 15 more minutes.
A gift. It's a gift.
The problem is that I had already turned this computer off. So I had to reboot it.
So you didn't get to hear the previous bit of feedback then, obviously.
Which was what?
Ian's.
Mm. Oh. Well, I read it.
It was the best bit of feedback. Oh, you've read it. Damn.
This is the end bit.
Right, so...
Yeah, the end bit was awful.
That brings the RTD era to an end. So, it's again, exactly as I expected it to be as far as the end of time goes. A complete mixture of opinions. All I can gauge it on is how
obviously you and I are right, but never mind.
Is how much I enjoyed it. And sometimes, even though I can accept it, it's not the best script, maybe. Some silliness.
I've got no problem with the script itself.
Well, the acting was amazing. There was probably characters like Dr. Phil says that weren't necessary. I mean, I think
the
Naismiths. They could have just been in for about 5 minutes just to sort of give a reason for them to resurrect the Master. And, you know, and then maybe when they brought the Master back to actually activate this this thingy, I keep forgetting the name of. The machine.
Immortality.
Yeah, they were a bit. They were very disturbing.
Not an immorality.
But unfortunately, for me personally,
well, could be with the nice.
It's such a joy watching Tennant and Cribbins in complete top form. I feel privileged to when I watch them two together, especially Bernard Cribbins. That outweighs any negative things or feelings I might have about this episode, and certainly the regeneration didn't let me down. As far as apart from the words, I don't want to go. But I accept the fact that that character of the Doctor wanted to carry on. He enjoyed being that incarnation, and he probably felt that it wasn't quite his time.
Well, taking lines like with Rose, where the stuff of legends and things like that, he was quite a selfish character, and I can understand I don't want to go fits in with the character.
And also, he was probably still a bit bonkers from, you know, the lead up to this episode. He wasn't quite, I think he was a bit slightly insane, but
he's
fighting against that as well.
Something said earlier, and that Dr. Phil brought up too, was it would have been interesting to have him regenerate in that booth, because the interaction between the 11th Doctor and Wilf would have just been priceless, I think, to have Wilf's reaction to the new Doctor.
There's a lot of ifs and buts in Doctor Who, isn't there?
I'm actually glad we didn't have that, because it would have spoiled a lot of the 11th Doctor's attitude and quirkiness. We get a bit of that with when he regenerates, but every Doctor's a bit crazy when they regenerate, but we've realised now that that's pretty much how the 11th Doctor acts. And I think if we'd seen that when he was in the glass box, it would have been a bit, it would have spoilt what we saw in the 11th hour, I think. We would have seen, oh, he's quirky and funny like that. But we'd have seen it a lot earlier.
Yeah. So, that's
and also, there's a bit of information I didn't know, that they recorded the music for the 11th hour and these two episodes at the same time. So that would explain why there are bits that sounded like I'm the Doctor, because that was a deliberate thing.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, that was interesting to know.
Okay, well, unfortunately, I think that we could really go on for hours doing about this, but this is a podcast, and it's...
Until the end of time!
Yeah, it's very good.
Adam, you didn't let me know that Peter Gilmore had died.
I didn't know Peter Gilmore had died. That's probably why.
He died on February the 3rd at the age of 81.
He was in Ghostlight.
He was not in Ghostlight. He was in Frontiers.
Oh, yeah, and in The Aeneid Line.
And The Wandin Line.
I was getting confused with another chap. I can't remember the name of now. Yeah, you're right. He was in Frontiers, yeah. I didn't know. That's why I didn't mention it. I didn't see that on the Doctor Who news page.
Oh. Well, I only read it in the newspaper, in the obituaries, and I thought, oh. I didn't know about that, because this was only came in on the 17th. No, not 17th. The 14th or 15th.
Well, Radio Times released some Doctor Who postcards that depicted Doctor Who covers throughout the years. It's quite good. I didn't buy it, but
Radio Times covers.
Yeah, yeah.
Aye.
Do you think that New Who could do a sequel to Frontios called Bacchios?
And I will say, there was, on the 11th of February, there was a reveal to some returning monsters that are coming, that are going to be returning. Okay. And I'm not going to spoil it.
I don't know about that.
I'm not going to spoil it.
Kirby?
That wasn't Kirby, that was Robert.
That's been officially announced, so it's not.
I don't care. It's a spoiler.
Yeah.
Well, why would they officially announce it?
Because they're idiots.
Ice warriors.
Right. While that argument continues, I'm going to say thank you, everybody, for joining the show this week. It's been a great episode. I'm sorry it's so long, but I think things needed to be aired and need to be put out there. And next week will be hopefully not as long with the 11th hour. Really looking forward to watching this one, because obviously it's a, you know, we're watching them quite close together, so it's a nice little follow-on from this one to that one. And that's next week.
Monday.
Not tomorrow, but
Monday,
the following one.
Monday.
And thanks, everybody. Thanks for putting up with me for the last...
It's already Monday here.
I don't want to go.
Nearly 3 hours. Hey?
I don't want to go.
Nevertheless, we're going. Till next week, goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye, him.
I don't want to go.
Doctor Who podcast is an APB Services production, sponsored by whoone.co.uk and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.
There's a
is this the talking over each other podcast? That's or what I was for thinking. God's sake. Go on. Everybody goes quiet.
Well, it's all or nothing.
La la la.